morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Honorable Chair members. My name is Buseletse Lotselo, Chief Director, Legal Services in the Department of Social Development.
Okay.
must be a television one day, but Nadia, you see how we react.
Don't forget, this is trouble. Okay. Over to you, Jacoste, to
okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. We'll start with the presentation on the child death, the role of the department as far as the child death and the domestic health, or the institutions of education are concerned. And then we'll end with the implementation of the children's act. And then,
just hold on.
I'm talking to the Child Justice Act and the Domestic Violence Act. The outline of my presentation is as indicated. I have the introduction within each legislation, the supporting legislation, human resources to implement the legislation, the Child Care Center, initiatives to support the implementation of the Act, and then within Domestic Violence Act, I will try to highlight the role of DSG in implementing this legislation, shelters and one-stop centers in implementing this legislation, and the guidelines on services related to domestic violence. And also, I have a slide where I'm talking about other initiatives that are supporting the implementation of the Act and the conclusions. As an icebreaker, I'm showing you this slide that crime is really getting out of hand. You can see even the people who is married are also hijacking a truck with milk, and the driver is at gunpoint because they want the milk. So the others are running behind the driver to get the milk in the truck.
Just milk.
Just milk. They're asking whether you've got milk in the truck so that they can take it. Oh my God. And then I also have a slide where I just want to talk about the criminal justice system and then where we fit in as social development. You see from the process where the crime is committed, is reported, is investigated, and there's also other, and the trial processes. The sentence.
Just a minute.
I was still explaining the process of criminal justice so that we can indicate how we fit in as social development. If you see that circle, the type of services we provide as GSD is mostly reception, assessment, and referral, because on arrest, we are expected to assess all children that are arrested or are alleged to have committed a crime. And then also we are expected to provide diversion programs for children who have been diverted, also provide alternative sentencing options. We need to provide secure care where we house children who are awaiting trial. We are also expected to provide child protection services, which is more on the Children's Act. We are also expected to provide intermediary services, though at the moment, these services were taken over by justice. It is provided for by the Department of Justice, but we used to do it. And then also we are providing other probation services to adults and children. Crime prevention, initiatives, we are also providing those within the criminal justice, and then also substance abuse related services, and then victim support services. So those are types of services in summary that we provide in social development, because it outlines it in the role we play in the criminal justice system. Within the Child Justice Act, the Act advocates for the important changes to the manner in which children in conflict to the law are managed and dealt with within the criminal justice itself. Since the conceptualization of the legislation, the Department of Social Development strives to align all its initiatives on children in country the law to the requirements of this legislation. The Department of Social Development is therefore responsible for the execution of the following functions stipulated by various pieces of legislation, including the Child Justice Act. As I indicated in the diagram, we are expected to provide assessments for all arrested children by our probation officers within 48 hours of arrest. Also, we are expected to provide and fund for diversion services, provide alternatives for children in custody the law. We also expected to provide home-based supervision programs, which we use either as a trial option or as a sentence option and also as a diversion option. So this home-based supervision program, we have circulated documents. You will see how we have outlined it. We use it on these three purposes. We also provide residential care facilities, as I've indicated. There are secure care facilities for children who are waiting trial so that they shouldn't wait trial in prison, but they should await trial in secure care facilities. But we must admit there are children who are still awaiting trial in prison for various reasons. We also provide pre-trial and pre-sentence reports for children, and we also provide alternative sentencing options when we write our pre-sentence reports. We also provide prevention programs, as I indicated, and early intervention services. Also, we do have supporting legislation that is really supporting the implementation of the Child Justice Act. We do have the Probation Services Act as amended. This section specifically on Section B states that any arrested child who has not been released shall be assessed by a probation officer as soon as reasonably possible, but before his or her first appearance in court in terms of Section 51C of the Criminal Procedure Act. So this section is really strengthening what the Child Justice Act is saying, that all children should be assessed. Also, this act provides that if a child has not yet been assessed when brought before the court may authorize the extension of the period within which the assessment must take place by periods not exceeding 7 days at a time following his or her first court appearance. The importance of this section or this clause is that even if there's a child who for some reason was not assessed within 48 hours, when the court realizes that he was not assessed, they can still provide an opportunity within 7 days that that child needs to be assessed. Section 4A refers to appointment of assistant probation officers and their duties. These are categories of workers who are working with our probation officers, and they provide supporting services and administrative tasks for those probation officers. They mostly deal with family finding. They provide the home-based supervision program. They also assist in supervision and collecting data. Also, Children's Act, it will be presented in details. I'm not going to go to that. I'll just make reference to those three because there is a linkage in terms of what we're going to implement in the Child Justice Act, your Chapter 8, and also subsection 2HB, early intervention, but most importantly, the Chapter 13, which speaks about residential care facilities and child and youth care programs, because our secure care facilities falls within that Chapter 3. In terms of human resources, we are saying probation officers. Currently, we have approximately 484 probation officers. Probation officers are trained, qualified social workers who are working only with this type of children. They are not doing any other thing. They are only doing services or providing services to children in custody alone. We are currently servicing 388 magisterial courts, 88 high courts, and 299 judicial courts. We use the old demarcations. We are aware that there are new demarcations that are being finalized. These numbers exclude social workers who perform probation services as part of their generic work and not as a specialty. As I've indicated, this 484 focuses only on children in custody alone. So in offices where you don't have a probation officer specializing, you also have social workers who are doing generic work but also providing probation services by doing assessments and other services when there's a need. National and provincial initiatives by the department to recruit students to study social work and social observer work is also underway, because there was a concern that we have high staff turnover, there's social shortage of social workers. There's a recruitment drive within the department to make sure that we can be able to increase, because there's no way we can appoint probation officers who are not social workers. So we rely on the recruitment drive that is taking place within the department to produce more social workers. Then we can be able to appoint them as specialized category of workers. Assistant probation officers, currently we have 360 APOs. The ratio that we are using, because these APOs are supervised by the probation officers, currently we're using the ratio of 1:2. But if you look at the numbers, they are not correlating, because some of them during the process are getting employment somewhere. You know, there's that movement within the system. But we do try to make sure that we appoint if we have vacancies to keep the ratio. We also had a program which we implemented in collaboration with UMSOBO Youth Fund and the National Youth Service Program to recruit and train 198 young people as assistant probation officers. When we started with the project, we had 198 learners, but 28 of them left the project during the training for employment opportunities elsewhere. So finally, we ended up with 150. We called them VAPOs, but we appointed them permanently within our structure. They are part of the 360 as assistant probation officers. And 19 of them were appointed in other fields within the department. Some went to FAP, some are within the department as administrators. This is a breakdown of the province in terms of the personnel. You can see the numbers there. In Northwest is 18 probation officers, Free State 14, KZN 41, Limpopo 39, Gauteng 75, Northern Cape 75, Mpumalanga 18, Eastern Cape 108, Western Cape 54. In terms of APOs, you can see the numbers, and then the VAPOs, these are the numbers in terms of Free State. We also have a category of numbers of VAPOs that are still finalizing their last training, I think it's in the Eastern Cape. Secure care centers. To date, we having 31 fully functioning secure care centers in our 9 provinces. We have 5 newly built and awaiting operationalization, and 18 new ones are planned within the MTF. The bed capacity of all these secure care facilities combined is 2,287, and currently there are 1,117 children admitted at this facility. The bed space available as we speak is 1,127. We also indicated the statistics from DCS that currently, as we speak, there are approximately 600 children on average that are waiting child in correctional service due to the seriousness of their offences. I must say this number has gone down. It used to be more than 800. So at least, because we have a task team that is working with DCS for MATD, where we check, we reassess those children that are there. Those that need to be removed, they are removed. But those that magistrates feel they cannot be removed because of the seriousness of the offense, they will have to await trial there. But what we're doing as a department, we are also started to pilot programs, because in DCS, they are not provided with any program. DCS is saying their responsibility is only for sentenced prisoners. So in terms of programs, we have piloted a program in 5 correctional facilities, and we are intending to roll it out. We are busy evaluating the pilot now, so that at least even those that are awaiting child in DCS facilities, they are able to access programs. This is a breakdown of bed capacity per province. In the supplementary information that we have handed out, there's a breakdown of secure care facilities in each area, where you can see, like for instance, in Eastern Cape, where is this secure care and what bed capacity is it able to accommodate. So those are the numbers, as I've indicated in summary. Other initiatives to support implementation. As a department, we also, within the IJS, the Integrated Justice System, we came up with information management system that we are using. The one, the other one is FICA. The next one is Institute Administrative System. These systems are used precisely to manage or to track the movement of children within secure care. I must say, we still have a challenge of implementation in those secure cares that are in the rural areas, because it's an electronic system, the network becomes a problem. So they mostly use manual based, but I think the IJS is attending to that to make sure that the network is upgraded so that they can access or they can be able to use the program. Other initiatives is the provision of diversion programs, as I've indicated. What we have done as a department, we have developed minimum nonsense standards for diversion to make sure that there's standardization. What we have done is also audited all diversion services or programs that are available, and we have a resource directory that we have finalized. As a requirement of the Child Justice Act, the department has also developed an electronic diversion register through our IT, but we have not yet implemented it. During the 2008-09 financial year, we are giving statistics in terms of the numbers that we have assessed, of children that we have assessed. We have assessed 43,939, diverted 23,782. So it shows that not all children that are assessed are diverted. So they go through different options. And we managed to place 7,029 under home-based supervision. Also, for this year, this new financial year from April to June, quarterly, because we get our statistics on quarterly basis, we up to so far we assessed 11,522, diverted 6,313, and in under home-based supervision we have 1,749. Also, in the supplementary information, we have given you statistics in terms of what is the approximate number of children arrested on average in a month, because those are the numbers we are working around. It's between 9,000 and 13,000 children are arrested on average on a monthly basis by staff. So those children need to be referred to us as on arrest so that we can be able to assess. But you will agree with me that sometimes it doesn't happen exactly as we want it. As a result, the numbers we have might not be correlating with the numbers of arrested children, because in reality, all arrested children should be assessed. So sometimes you can see that there are children who slip through the system without being even assessed. So we're working closely with staff to make sure that they need to really inform our social workers and our probation officers on arrest. Even if it's a child below 10 years or a child at what stage, they need to be assessed so that they can be referred appropriately for services. We are also busy with the National Policy Framework, because the Child Justice Act also proposes that we need to come up with a policy framework on accreditation to make sure that we provide an accreditation system for all service providers in the sector, and all services that are provided, we need to accreditate them. So we are busy with that process. We are all aware that this act will become operational by 1 April 2010. So all these preparations are targeting towards April. This legislation, the Child Justice Act, will become operational 1 April 2010. Those have been signed. Yeah, because justice is busy with the regulation. So I think an act cannot be...
When was this signed?
Last year, during August or July. Yeah. April 2010. Yeah, that's what I expect. In terms of capacity building, as a department, we do have an ongoing capacity building program for our probation officers. We do train them on restorative justice, on diversion, on assessment procedures, because they need to understand what is it that is expected of them. And we also try to train them to be able to be expect witnesses in court, because some states are expected to come and provide evidence. And we also train them. Last year we had a program on report writing, and we continue because we had magistrates complaining and the judges that the type of reports our probation officers are providing really are not of good quality. And what we're also doing as a department, we are working on the issue of supervision, because we realize it's a gap. Probation officers are just writing reports. There's no one who's really interrogating the reports and checking the recommendations and the quality. So it's one thing that we prioritize as a department. We are also partnering with UNICEF to train our personnel, more especially in preparation of the Act. The UNICEF is currently developing probation practice guidelines for us, and they are going to conduct training in the following year. We will start with the training of the master trainer, so that even if we have high staff turnover, at least there will be core trainers that will be available to continue providing the training. That was it in terms of the Child Justice Act. And I must indicate that even though this act was signed last year and it will be officially implemented next year, a social development we have started long ago to ensure that we start preparing or implementing what the Child Justice Act is requiring us to do. I think it's mostly because we also have supporting legislation, like the Probation Services Act was really mandating us to begin to appoint probation officers and also begin to do assessments informed by the Probation Services Act and other legislation. In terms of the Domestic Violence Act, this act...
Members, how would you like us to question this discussion?
Thank you. This act provides, amongst others, for a protection order to be issued by court by victims for victims of domestic violence and for shelters to be established and to provide maximum protection and safety for victims. The Act recognizes that domestic violence is a serious social ill. There is a high incidence of domestic violence within South African society. Victims of domestic violence are among the most vulnerable members of society. And I think you will agree with me that domestic violence takes on many forms. The Act of domestic violence may be committed in a wide range of domestic relationships. The remedies previously available to the victims of domestic violence have proved to be ineffective. The act affords the victims of domestic violence the maximum protection from domestic abuse that the law can provide. It also introduces measures which seek to ensure that the relevant organs of state give full effect to the provisions of this act. It also ensures that the state is committed to the elimination of domestic violence. The role of social development within this act, because if you read the act, it's basically about protection orders and protection orders. The department is tasked with the responsibility of monitoring and evaluating the impact of the VP broadly with regard to crime prevention and meeting the needs of victims of crime and violence. We are, as a department, leading in terms of VP, and we facilitate the establishment and management of safe and secure shelters in South Africa. With the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act, lack of shelters for victims of domestic violence was identified as a major constraint towards the effective implementation of this act. This constraint acted as a catalyst for the department to develop a strategy for shelters for victims of domestic violence, which was finalized in June 2009, and also launched in 2009. Though it was there before, but we had to review it now, looking at the challenges that are facing our society. We also have a list of shelters that are available in each province. It's a small number, it's not enough, but in our database we have 96, not any other number. And we have circulated the resource directory, where you will see where the 96 is in terms of location, and the best place availability, that is the, in Western Cape alone we have 15, Eastern Cape 11, Gauteng 27, Free State 10, Northern Cape 5, Limpopo Province 9, Mpumalanga 3, KwaZulu-Natal 13, Northwest 3. You can see that the distribution and the geographical spread is really a challenge, most especially in the rural areas. Efforts are still being made by the department to continue lobbying and ensuring that the provinces establish shelters, most especially in Limpopo, Northwest, and Mpumalanga and Free State. These shelters, as I've indicated, provide accommodation for a period of 6 months and clear exit plans that needs to direct further intervention for such victims. The department is also exploring the issue of transitional houses with the Department of Human Settlements for reintegration back into the community, because there are those victims that really do not want to go back to the same environment after they stayed within the shelter for 6 months. So we are in our VP management team, we have invited a rep from the Human Settlement so that they can assist us in the transitional, in establishing transitional houses for victims of domestic violence. We also have one-stop centers that are also there. These are different from the shelters. Here you only have one night accommodation. It's mostly crisis intervention sort of, but they can refer to the shelter if you now need, you know, accommodation for more than 2 days. Currently, we have 7 of them in the country. Others, we established them in partnership with the UNODC and also the Japan Embassy. In the Western Cape province, there are 2. Gauteng, there's 1. Eastern Cape, 1. Northern Cape, 1. Mpumalanga, 1. Northwest, 1. Northwest, they are using a temporary structure. They are still building their own facility. So currently, it is functional, but in a temporary structure. So that's why we counted it as 7. And we are also going to add 4 other one-stop centers in 4 provinces through the EU support program. We are going to establish additional ones, 1 in Limpopo, 1 in KZN, 1 in Mpumalanga, 1 in Gauteng, and 1 in Free State. We also have draft guidelines on services related to domestic violence for our sector within social development. We embarked on this process also during 2008. The rationale for developing these guidelines is basically to provide a comprehensive, multifaceted, and holistic guidelines on services to victims of domestic violence to guide our service providers, our social workers within social development sector. We also want to bridge the gaps in terms of policy and practice aimed at dealing with violence against women and children. We also want to minimize myths and facts of domestic violence with those guidelines. We also outline interventions required by service providers and government departments for dealing with violence against women. Other initiatives to support the implementation of Domestic Violence Act. We are also involved in the implementation of a perpetrators program through the strategy that we have developed on the engagement of men and boys in prevention of gender-based violence. It was piloted in Northwest, and we are in the process of rolling out because we wanted to test if this is going to work. So the evaluation that was done through the support of the UNODC clearly indicates that it can work, but there are certain issues that we need to take into consideration. We also participate in national campaigns such as 15 Days of Activism on No Violence Against Women and Children, and also 365 Days Plan of Action, which is led by MPA. We are also involved in the awareness raising about domestic violence all year round, but we intensify those awareness raising campaigns during Victims' Rights Week, which was identified and determined by the Department of Justice as they meet the Victims' Charter. As we speak, it starts from the 14th to the 18th of September this week. Yeah, yesterday we presented to our committee, they said we don't know about it. I think the problem is our marketing strategy because it's not really communicated properly. Challenges within the sector in terms of implementing both legislation. We indicate that we do have a problem in terms of monitoring and evaluation mechanisms to monitor the implementation and managing information itself. Those have indicated that within the Child Justice Act, we have come up with an information management system, but still it's not implemented, especially in rural areas, because of challenges of network and also data sectors. Also, the marketing and communication strategy for our services. Our services really are not known. In fact, even our contribution towards domestic violence act is not really known, and even on the child justice, it's only people who work within the sector who knows what our role is. High staff turnover, as I've indicated, but we're dealing with that issue in terms of the recruitment and making sure that we retain our staff by making that we improve their conditions in rural areas. The issue of farm workers also came in handy, that we are weak in terms of targeting those farm areas. We need to make sure that we begin to integrate farm areas in our program. Registration of shelters and accreditation of service providers and programs in VP or in domestic violence environment is still a gap. We don't have mechanism. The Domestic Violence Act doesn't provide for registration of shelters, neither for the accreditation of service providers and programs that are provided within the sector. Also, budgetary constraints to strengthen services, most especially within the child justice sector. The two slides, I think, on challenges and proposals to deal with challenges. Thank you, Honorable Chair. In terms of proposals on how we deal with those challenges, we have started the process of developing generic indicators within the sector, because for us to come up with an MME framework, we need generic indicators that will be more special within the VP sector, which will incorporate the domestic violence issues. We are also busy with the communication strategy supported by National Treasury with the EU funding, more especially for VEP. And then we also commissioned a feasibility study for the development of VEP legislation to address the challenges I've outlined of accreditation. So because this one, at the cluster level, we need to agree whether it's Domestic Violence Act which needs to be amended, or we can come up with a new legislation altogether to make sure that we cover the issue of registration of shelters, because currently they are not registered, and also the accreditation of services and service providers who are providing services to victims of domestic violence. And we are looking at this legislation that will be broader than domestic violence. It will be for all victims of crime and violence. We are also continuously engaging Treasury to allocate additional funds through sector bids and use of donor funding. I think during my presentation I indicated that we have UEU support, we have UNODC support, we also have UNICEF support. So we are, as a department, going out and looking for support, because we know that Treasury cannot always allocate you additional funds because we have competing priorities in government, especially the 2010. But we are continuously engaging them to ensure that they allocate resources, because even if we say we have 484 probation officers, we need more of them so that the program or the services can be provided in detail. In conclusion, as I've indicated, I think the department has already done substantial work with regard to its readiness for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. And we did really appoint probation officers. We have established reception, assessment, and referral centers in number of courts and police stations to be able to provide assessment. These RARs are just, it's an office which is provided to us in a court facility or in a police station facility. So we call them reception, assessment, and referral center. But some of these services are done within our offices of social development, because we have been asking justice to say where there is an office they should allocate social development so that they can provide such services, you know, in an accessible manner. We have also provided diversion programs in partnership with our civil society organizations. We fund most of them to provide such services on our behalf. Also, home-based supervision, as I've indicated, which is provided by our own assistant probation officer. And we also develop national action plans on the areas of responsibility for DSV in terms of implementing the Act. The implementation of domestic violence has revealed that people are aware of services and are reporting cases to staff and DSV offices. What we have realized in implementing this Act is that some victims, they come straight to our offices rather than going to staff. They come to report it as a family dispute. So we deal with it when we need to refer to staff. What we do is provide information, and sometimes social workers call for joint interview to provide counseling services and other services that are needed. I think I spoke about the flexibility study. Thank you, Akin.
We find that with this legislation that are overlapping to other departments, like this one, like these two, we have young people, we have staff, we have justice. Then, you know, the one department will shy away from issues. To another department, we end up not knowing who is actually responsible, you know, and that is a problem. It's still a problem for us, and also what doesn't actually help us as a community. And in most of your presentations, most departments, we are going to. You never say we have done 1, 2, 3. You know, we're always going to. If we open for discussion to members. Members, you are free to. One, two is Malcolm, three is Carl, four is Duncan, five is Robinson. Yeah, in that session. Yes, Mr. Talk.
Madam, Zanda, you're going to find us to be acting like the chair is saying. The background is that we're chasing after something. We are told here that in the Children's Act, only 300 programs have been implemented. No, 30 has been implemented, and 300 hasn't been. So when you take a report like that, and you guys come, and in my opinion, social development is right at the core. I would say that's a core function. justices of police are done there for people, but social development here as a core function of developing socially children, families, and families of the police. The functions are not performed at the level of the police or justice. I'm sure as a particular community, you know, we are here to do something to make sure those are done. But the point is the real people who must monitor, evaluate, and ensure implementation and make sure things are happening are you as social development. Because the social welfare of this country, the social welfare of our society, children, family, the family unit issue. So, we still not taking clear why 300% of the because if you don't know and things are happening that it is in black, I'll say you shouldn't get your performance bonus to all of you. No, I mean, I'm sure you are on scorecard and the scorecard will see part of the target in your scorecard of the chief to be achieved should be to implement programs. And if programs are not implemented in a good spirit, I really feel you shouldn't get your bonus with the whole department from top to bottom. Maybe if you get a bit hungry, then you start implementing.
Thank you, Chairperson. I enjoyed what the Honourable Member has said. First, we'd like to thank the department for the presentation. That's fine. And then, what I'm interested in before I ask my question, I'm just sorry that these pages are not the numbers. When it comes to the provision of residential care facilities, these secure care centers, certain of our youth are still in prison, now awaiting trial. You can just speak to that, because you didn't mention that we know exactly, you know, for what it means. Then, when it comes to your shelters, I'm going to mention it again today. Lifeline told us as commitment, there are 60 shelters. And you are coming to a place. So I think that has to be confirmed. Do we really have 96 or do we have 60? Because I heard you stressing that one. Then when it comes to the page on the assessment, I just know you spoke about youth that falls through the cracks. But when a person looks at the number that the department assessed, and the number that's diverted, and the number that is in our own way to say, those figures they don't tell you, which means they're falling through cracks there too. Because you look at 23 plus 7, it gives you 40. You look at 8 plus 6 plus 1, it gives you 8. So there's roughly 3,000 that's not there. Normally I don't like doing it, but first I have to ask those questions. Because you want things to carry, not like the 96 or the 60. So things have to carry wherever when it comes to numbers. Then when it comes to remedies previously available to the victims of domestic violence, has proved to be ineffective. I think it's very important to tell us what was so ineffective that we now do. And of course, we are also interested in the impact of that legislation. Then I think what is important is fixing budgetary constraints. And it will be important for us to know how much funds have been allocated for the implementation of the domestic violence. And even the child, because it is an intimate ministerial, you know, it's integrated actually. We're all integrated. How much was allocated for that will be important to us. Then the other one is how much budget are allocating to shelter. I think that's important too. And then what I'd like to say to you, person, we have to thank the department, because with justice we mentioned human equity, and they are taking it on board. You know, remember last week we received a proposal that human equity has to be part of the whole integrated approach, because we had complaints we once they're even on shelters and that can leave, where do they go to? They can't go on. So I see they took on that resolution. And then the other thing is this too, I would like to take a point that you spoke to, that when it comes to this integrated approach that we have, that is the social value. The point that you made, don't share that to the other department. If you don't know the answer, say you'll find it out for us. Because I do want to take a comment further yesterday, because there have been dialogue between us, between myself and the department. Because we, as the ANC letter, we speak about an integrated approach. And we want things to work out that way, or else we're not going to have effective delivery on the ground. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation you just gave to us now. Actually, I was also worried about the total number of 96 which are there for the shelters and the 50, but you have covered me already. My question is how many shelters are currently being funded by the Department of Social Development? And the second question is, what services, if any, exist for children who witness this domestic violence?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also agree with the other members. I really want to say today that we are failing up. Really, to the legislation that is on the table, with our organizations out there, with the sphere of government, with private sector, we are all failing ourselves. And I really think, and I hope, Chairperson, and I think I'm sure, that we will have to drive this thing. We can't have a Children's Act, like the member says, where we only implement 50 programs and 300 degrees. And I know why. Because it's not been enacted. And governments will have to, and the departments will have to tell out to us what the real problem is. Why is it money? And obviously it is most probably money. Because I would like to believe in our departments, we have expertise on this legislation, we have expertise on our strategies, and all of that. So I don't think that is where the lack is. Putting things forward, but I really think that if it is funding, then we will have to make a much bigger attempt to address this. If I just look at the challenges, the lack of any M&E mechanism to monitor implementation. Now, national government, okay, the first time that I'm on this platform, I believe our core function is putting legislation forward. But on the other hand, when it comes to implementation, how can we still have a lack of M&E at national?
Yeah.
What are we doing? What are we saying? Is that not what a local government has to say? Maybe. You know, but if national government, there's still a lack of M&E, then I really have a problem with it. The next thing is marketing and communication strategy for services. When we go out for these public participation on legislation with the NCLP, as councillors, as members of provincial legislatures and national government, then the outcry, Chairperson, is always the community. They don't really know what is in what the act really means for them, what it can offer them. And public participation is a constitutional imperative. But we keep on saying that
you know, we just simply don't do these things. We don't ensure that we do communicate. And then, of course, the budgetary constraints. I really feel that maybe as government and as departments, we need to vigorously make an attempt. Not just speak to Treasury, maybe Treasury has to speak to somebody else to get us the funds, the necessary funds. Or maybe we must then get buy-in. I mean, we have international organizations that help us, but this can no longer be the challenges, and I agree with you. We cannot speak of just the challenges, we must start speaking of what do we really get right. I also want to agree, I'm sorry I'm going to be maybe a little longer. I want to agree with Member Malfatti in asking how much funding is going to the going to the shelters. What I want to know is, are these shelters, that these 96 or whether it be 60, are they fully funded by the spheres of government, either by national, province, or local government, and then maybe if the department can give us a breakdown of where the shelters are, who is the responsibility for what percentage of funding. Because we must also remember that in social development, most of our NGOs are only, with regard to grants and all of it, are only funded 25% of the grants. So how much our NGOs at the end do their implementation properly? I think the last. Then maybe I must point out and specifically ask this question: why has it taken so long for national policy guidelines for victor empowerment to be developed and launched? Because it is a given that the victim empowerment program was launched as early as 1998 as part of the National Crime Prevention Strategy. We go way back, years back, and we are still actually there and not here. Thank you, Jim.
A lot has been said, and I don't want to repeat what has been said, and I do think we'll cover it, but I will be able to talk it. Can I just say, a lot of acronyms have been used. We just have definitions of those. Not everybody knows exactly what everything is. There's a quick attack to start with that. Another thing I would like to ask is that, you know, when you give us these presentations, we actually have your names and contact details printed. So that you can know how to contact people afterwards. We don't always catch the names. The sound is not very good here, and sometimes that is a bit of a problem. There's been a request for more funding, and I know we're always saying we need more and more money, and yet the budget is limited. But I think we also need to look at whether the money is being effectively used, because time and time again we have seen that money gets rolled over or gets sent back. So I think we need to check on the fact that whether money is adequately being used and whether we are giving money, quality for the amount of money that is available. Certainly we need more, but if you're not using what you've got properly and it's not being properly administered, then that is a problem too. The communication is something that was mentioned by my colleague, and I'd just like to say, I think many people are unaware of what services there are and how they can be assisted by the parties. And we have the problem in our country is very large. So it's not easy for everybody in rural areas, but even in cities, to know what is available and how to get there. And I think somehow this communication needs to be improved so that everybody knows what their rights are and where they can find assistance. I'm also concerned about shelters, crisis centers, and so on. And I just wonder, we don't have enough. But I also find that people, some NGOs, people doing things on a voluntary basis, when they look for funding, they sometimes get funding just for a particular project. But there isn't actually money for administration, for running costs, for food. And I think this is a lack, because the NGO sector, private individuals, churches, whatever, are supplementing what government is doing, what the departments aren't doing. And I think we need to look at a way of increasing the funding so that they can be effective. Ultimately, it would be better if government could do it all, but we know there is a problem, so we can't. And there are any shelters, I just wonder about the facilities, whether there is provision for families to be together. In a night shelter, for example, I know this is different now, but night shelters leave a hope for people who are stuck. There are no facilities for families. You have husbands, you have men and women's facilities, and there's no place for children. So what do you do when the family situation actually wants to be together, where the family wants to be together, not only in a night shelter, but in a kind of a crisis situation, and where women and children are suffering from family violence? Where do they go? What do they do?
Kevin, when we talk about spending funds, and I'm sure that the Department of Social Development are going to get a tax when it comes to spending their funds. I mentioned this before, and I think it is very relevant that we talk about it again today. Because we search for funds, there's not enough funds. But when we, social development, make available 500 million rand in the last quarter of a financial year for social relief of the stress, then that is a very big concern, a very, very big concern. And I'm really appealing and asking the department not to go there. Not even if it is for political use, which in many cases it is. Then my other concern that I also want, because I know that there's organizations, and this really comes from my heart, Chairperson, and I do mean it in a positive way, but I also want to ask our organizations whether their programs, with regard to children, whether their programs are in fact still aligned with the real needs of our children. Maybe they also have to go back and just check whether they are in fact in line and be innovative and speak to social development, speak to us and the committee and this new department, the new ministry. Because like I also said previously, a lot of money or most of the money goes to our NGOs. And my concern is that we do not see the sustainable changes made to our children, women in the sectors that we have to deal with in the department. And then just to make a statement on for the presenter, Chairperson, this, I just hope that we're not going to distribute this, because this is not a very, you know, kids mustn't see this, really, they mustn't see this, because, I mean, maybe this is another kind of value, but maybe not,
you're going to conclude the discussion. In terms of transparency, on the side for the transition, you know, also, what is important, you said you are having talks with treasury with regard to additional funding. But what is important is what one of the members said. Before having talks with treasury, the original allocation, why is it effectively used? That's what is important. And what one would want to know on your national program that you have, you say you have national programs, I wonder how much you spend on that and how effective they are. But sometimes we attend these national programs and we just look well at that time, we can't really comment and intervene, but 95% of them are not invested. And if we don't tell you people, you are not going to know that. Because mostly what we do you just make t-shirts and pamphlets which people don't even read. They are not in their mother language and so forth. But you have spent money on that. So, you know, it ends up like money gone down the drain. So you have to be careful how you do this thing. And of course, when you make your programs, you never involve us as MPs, you know, to give ideas, you see them on your own. So they don't, you know, they're not effective enough. But they don't give you a chance to respond and we will come back to you with your addition. Could you respond?
Thank you, all honorable.
And remember, you came here with a huge amount of money. I expect them to help you.
Yeah. Thank you, honorable. They will help me answering all the questions. If I can start with the first one of the Children's Act, I will request later my colleague, Dr. Marisha, to give you the Children's Act related one. Then number two was that issue of 600 children in prison and what are they for when they are awaiting trial in prison. Mm-hmm. It's mostly for scheduled offenses, for serious offenses, because remember, the magistrate anyway decides where a child should await time. We make a recommendation after assessment, and what they do, they look at the assessment report and the type of offense and whether this child is a re-offender, all those things, and then they later determine, no, we think this child can await time in a correctional facility rather than in your facility because of the nature of the offense. We think he's a risk to others or to himself or herself. So we don't have much control of that, but we know we have a list of them because we always meet with DCS to do the assessment where there's a need, and we go back to court for alternative payment placement when there's a need. So we can provide you with a list of if that's what the committee is in terms of how many children are there and for what offenses specifically, whether it's murder, whether it's attempted rape, whether it's armed robbery, and so on. The next one was about the assessment of children, the numbers that do not correlate. Mm-hmm. Yes, the numbers will not correlate because it's not all assessed children who are diverted. Mm-hmm. It's not all assessed children who are accessing home-based supervision. It's not all assessed children who go through the criminal justice system. So the number of children who are assessed, it should be correlating with the number of arrests. Mm-hmm. But I think when I presented, I indicated that sometimes it's true. I cannot lie to the committee. The number of arrests and the number of children with arrests, they do not correlate for now. Those are the numbers that are supposed to correlate because we are saying all arrested, all, irrespective of the type of offense, they should be assessed. But that is not the case. But moving forward, that number of assessments won't be the same with diversion, with those diverted, won't be the same with those under home days. Because after assessment, each one goes different. With others are awaiting trial with their parents at home, others are awaiting in different places. So those numbers won't correlate. The one that I admit is the one of arrest and the assessment. That one should be correlating, but up to now, it's not correlating. So we are hoping that at some stage it will correlate because there's no child that must be arrested by the police and not being assessed by us as social development. So the strong partnership between DSC and family must be really strengthened in such a way that, because once they slip through the system, then it's difficult to locate where the child is. Because it's not assessed by us, it means we don't know where that child is in terms of movement within the criminal justice. Or sometimes what they do, they refer that child back to us when the child has appeared for the first time. Then the prosecutor realizes, where's the assessment report? Then they say, no, this child must go back to be assessed by a probation officer. Then that's when we can deal with the case. Because prosecutors will also say, from now on, we are not going to take any case and take it forward without an assessment report. Mm-hmm. So that will also help us to make sure that we do assessment. The next question was the interventions of domestic violence, of which ones were not really, we're saying they are not effective.
Mm.
I think I didn't mention that we did a research domestic violence survey last year.
Mm.
That's where we kicked it out. Because people were beginning to say what is working and what is not working in terms of the reporting system, in terms of the type of services they receive from various stakeholders. Because remember, sometimes it's not one department that must service the particular victim. So you'll find that in that report, they will indicate that in fact there are these gaps, in social development there are these gaps, in justice there are these gaps. So that research is also available. We can circulate numbers so that they can see what are the details that are there in terms of the type of victims that are there and the methodology that we have used in terms of doing that research. How much budget is allocated for shelter? As I speak, I don't have the figures, but we can provide that information. What I know is that they are funded in provinces, and we have a challenge, even not only for shelter. Provinces are funding shelters differently. So we are now trying to streamline funding for all services within social development, because it's not only on shelters, even on other services. You find that each province, they've got their own. Others is 20 rand per day, per victim, per person. Others is 25 rand. You know, it varies. So what we say to the committee is that we will provide that information in terms of the breakdown per province, what is it that they are funding per shelter. Because I need to confirm again here that we do have 96 shelters.
Mm-hmm.
Irrespective of what Lifeline is set, we have 96, but not all are funded by government. I think that's a distinction.
In the charter, you as national government, why don't you come up with a guideline? On charter, you should have some kind of a uniformity. You should come up with a guideline as national government. Don't just leave it to the public to do their own thing
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think you're right. What is lacking is the guideline on funding. But we do have nonsense standards. We do have guidelines and strategy on how shelters should be run. But I think the challenge here is the funding that we are talking about. Provinces are funding differently. So that's the intervention that the National Department should have done long ago. And we need really to make sure that there's that standardization of funding in terms of shelter. That one we agree and accept. But in terms of how they should run, there is guidance. There are nonsense standards and there are strategies. But we are also saying those two are not enforceable. That's why I talked about the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will have nonsense standards, but you can't pin down or take somebody to court if they are not complying with nonsense standards. You can't take them to court if they are not implementing the guidelines or strategies. So that's why we're advocating for legislation, but we need to be informed by something. So the feasibility study that is going to be completed this year will tell us. And the CLASA is also supporting the move that we really need something. Either we review or amend the Domestic Violence Act to include all these issues that we have complained about within the cluster. Or we come up with a VE legislation, victim empowerment legislation, that will encompass all other victim support services beyond just domestic violence. Integrated justice system, we must shy away if certain departments are not doing what they're supposed to do. Yes, we do try, but then we do have a forum where we meet as a cluster within the criminal justice system. So there are challenges. We do communicate them. I think one challenge that I've mentioned is that one of our numbers not correlating with that. So it shows exactly that there is a problem there, because we indicated to them, when you arrest, please make sure that what we have done, we've provided them with numbers of our probation officers for each police station, because we do have a number. We say, you guys, you service this particular police station. So we gave them the number. So what they need to do is to make sure that every time they arrest a child under 18, they need to phone our probation officer. So if there are challenges, we do communicate them with within the cluster to be resolved. But sometimes it's not done as within 24 hours. It's a process that they need to be engaged in.
Let me share your question. Give it to your other colleagues.
Maybe my colleagues can give you that and give you the challenge.
Of course. I'll make a presentation on this to the students and who will respond to some of the questions when I do my presentation. But on the funding of the NGOs in general, there was a question around that the fact that the government does not fund NGOs or enough sufficiently. We are aware that there's a lot of disparity in the country with problems finding, you know, specific NGOs that, you know, very different rates of different funds, and the amounts, for example, might be the same, for example, for the funding of social workers, it might be different. It might be a certain amount in Western Cape, and it can take, you know, a different amount for that. We are addressing that currently. We put a project on mountain standards for all work, for all services, especially also services in the department, to ensure that there is standardization. We have a project here on financial awards, which all everybody should be implemented, but we realize it's not been implemented across the board. We are interested that policy which needs to be amended, so that there's uniformity in the country. And we don't have legislation on the funding of the NGOs. We have a legislation that regulates the registration of NGOs and the capacity building of NGOs, but we don't have the legislation on the funding of the NGOs. I think this is a gap in government, and we are revising the current policies so that we can develop that legislation. We hope that in the next year we might be getting that legislation in Parliament for consideration. The legislation on social services. In fact, yesterday when we had a discussion in the department, the minister was saying it might be a more comprehensive legislation regulating, you know, our partnerships with the NGOs across the board, not only for welfare services, for example, services for domestic violence, for children, and so, but across the board in community development.
And also we are very keen to value social workers. Not a lot of stuff, but we need to look at their activity workers. And social workers are underpaid. But today we are saying to the relevant department, they are underpaid. It's like in family advocates, they are underpaid.
The salary for social workers, but in government. We have done the regrading of the salary for social workers almost 3 years ago. Yeah. And then the social workers are also going to benefit from the OECD. Yeah. But we know that we need to extend it to the social workers who are working with the NGO sector. We are talking with Treasury to provide us with funding so that this can be extended to the social workers.
So you do agree?
Yeah, we do agree. We agree with the disparity, but we have to agree so that we do something about it.
Yeah. Are they coming back to you?
I'm afraid they're coming back to you. Okay. The next one was the issue, why has it taken so long for the DP policy guidelines to be finalized? Because they were finalized last year. If I remember, the process started very long ago. I think you can remind me to the year. 2006 of developing the very, it's still late because the victim empowerment program started in 1998. Yeah. Then 2006, that's when the process of developing these guidelines started. It was developed as a policy, but I think that at cluster level, it was decided that let it be a guideline so that each and every department can come up with supporting policies in line with their mandate. Because if you look at that policy guideline, it speaks to what is it that each department should be doing in terms of victim empowerment. What are the interventions? What are the, you know, what are we suggesting in terms of moving forward? So they said it's better we call it a guideline rather than a policy itself. Mm-hmm. So yes, it took so long. I think it's because of the robust debate within the cluster. It had to go back to the department to be, because it was developed by a team consisting of various government departments, though it is located within the department, but various government departments representatives were involved. So we agree it took so long, and that's the reason I can give now in terms of it had back and forth for the past 2 to 3 years. So it was only finalized last year, and we are moving forward. In March this year, okay. All right, and then, but I must say, some of the things were implemented, even though the formal policy was approved finally March this year. It's not like departments were sitting behind to say we are waiting for approval. They began to take all those issues and incorporate them in their plan. But the challenge is, if you don't have a policy that guides you, sometimes resources are not allocated adequately, even within the department, let alone treasury now. Within the department, they will say, what informs your intervention? What informs your program? So I think now that it has been approved, it really boosts in terms of you fighting for resources within your department. We take note of the fact that the presentation is not numbered. We apologize for that. Next time we will make sure it's numbered. And then provision of contact details also in the presentation. And the definitions of acronyms. We're very sorry. I think there are 2 or 3. We tried to make sure that we don't have insurance, but somehow they found themselves. We are very sorry about that. And then there's another question about shelters, whether they accommodate families. The shelters that are there, most of them, they are accommodating women with their children. So there is a space for families to stay together. And yeah, we have acknowledged that the funding for shelters, even though there's disparity now, you find that it's 75% they are funding maybe the social worker or certain projects, it's the truth. But what we are doing now with also with the EU funding, we are saying let's also fund them for their running costs. Because if you are a shelter also running programs, outreach programs, there's no way you can do that with only a funded post. You need other running costs, you have your transport, your promotional material, all the other things. So the funding that we are providing now through EU for shelters, it covers for those. Even computers. Yeah, through EU funding, it is done with us. We have a 20 million euro for the next, for until next year, December, to improve victim empowerment support services. So with this one, we will make sure that it is done like that. Because some of them are saying they need offices. So we're also proposing that maybe Wendy houses can be bought through this fund to be able to, you know, run their business in that office while the other rooms are used for accommodation. So those are the things that we also looking at. So when they write their business plan, those are the things that they need to indicate to say, these are our needs, and they do the costing. Then we look at it and we adjudicate the business plan. But then, remember, it's for the grant funding. What we need to do is to integrate that to our normal funding, because we said we need to sustain the funding after the EU next year has come to an end. So the agreement that we've signed with Treasury as a country is that we need to sustain. So we're hoping Treasury will give us resources to be able to sustain, because it won't help to give them a car, a house which they cannot maintain after the project. Okay. Yeah, finally, I think I just want to comment on that one of our programs not being effective, like your national campaign. Yes, they might not be effective. We welcome any suggestion on how we can really better our interventions and programs, especially the celebrations of International Days, the awareness campaigns. We welcome any suggestions. We have started developing material in different languages and even in Braille, because I remember on the 26th of June, we had counselors that were in Braille. We also had counselors that were in the language of the province that we are visiting at that time. So we have started to consider those issues. Finally, we have noted the issue of communication strategy and the MME. That's why I've put them as challenges. We are going to take them forward. Thank you. Unless you have left something, then you have left something.
Thank you, Chair. No, Chair, I wanted to respond, although it didn't come directly as a question, but I think, Chair, you interjected by asking, are we serious to only implement the Child Justice Act in April next year?
Mm-hmm.
Now, usually, Chair, the Act will be operationalized once certain things have happened, but this one is specific. It's stated in Section 100 of the Act to say that this Act will come into operation on the 1st of April 2010. So there's nothing that we can do. Even if all the departments were ready, we would still have to wait for the 1st of April 2010.
What
Chair, I was saying, you had asked why is it that we are only operationalizing the Child Justice Act in 1st April 2010. And I'm saying, this Act is specified in the Act itself as to when the Act is going to come into operation. And I was saying, even if by this time all
even
the departments
are ready, you would
it's just rather unusual, but you may find, Chair, that it's unusual to have such a provision, but at the same time it pressurizes the departments to ensure that by this date they are ready, because sometimes it takes even 3 years before the Act is operational.
Things are going wrong in our country with children, because children in terms of address issues are not taken care of, and there is that effect we had in the report was that in Nathan it was, but this is the case with all provinces. Children are not at school and children are not having food, and that is why the condition is hard by you get so much time and so on, in fact they're going to be a disaster long term when the children are growing up. So the end they then say the problem is that out of all children's ex programs only they are implemented 300 are not implemented. So what I suggest is maybe you should meet with the NGO, because they said their information is based on that. And that's the accurate representation, because if indeed a higher percentage of our children are living under conditions that they are living, they are not as small as other people, then it indeed you are able to exercise. And when you come back, you can come back and give us the report. Out of the 300 that are not implemented, what is the proper analysis, why are they not implemented? Because it's not just funding, they can throw money. But if money is not used properly, we will never have to be equipped with that. So what I suggest is that you meet with this NGO and have a discussion with them, and maybe in the future come back with them and give us a proper report. Otherwise, to be honest, we have to ask.
Thank you. Is whether when it comes to the shelters, well, we just talked to Brian, but we didn't say whether they expect to disabilities. So, you know, people with disabilities. So I think that will be important. And then my proposal to the committee will be to, when it comes to the three acts, that we receive the full funding, what will the funding be, and let us do oversight on it, you know, for the future. Thank you.
Okay.
you didn't answer really my question of what kind of services were children who witnessed domestic violence. It wasn't answered, and my deepest concern really, although she has answered me, is this department funded shelters, whether is there any provision made for accommodating persons with disabilities, which is really worrying, and I didn't hear the department speak about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, for the opportunity to give me this proper return to the Shepherd's to you. I'm Honorable Makuba, I'm the alternate member for Shepherd's Shepherd's. So, the first time that I'm in this room today. Just a clarification that I just wanted to ask for from our presenter. She spoke about under human resources, she spoke about the social worker shortage. I just wanted to know whether we have a shortage of social workers because of budgetary constraints, or do we have a shortage of social workers because of the lack of qualified people in our country? And if it is this, is the department having any initiative to try and address this matter? For an example, communicating with our universities, kind of people who are doing that degree, how many of them will be completing next year, their possibility for the department to actually get them in, train them, you know, that is what I wanted. And on the other cases, like the information dissemination, I think I was covered. Thank you.
And thank you next time when you come, the committee we will engage you on, because you have told us that you do a lot of tasks, you know, home-based supervision problems, but we don't know what you do. You just say home-based supervision, we don't really know the exact tasks that you do. And also on the provision of residential care facilities, how do you do that? So, just on this page, when you come back to us next time, you can extend for us. Just fill in and for today and not, you know, put pressure. Just tell us what you're really doing. Honorable Johnson, I know you never want to stop. Stop now.
The only time there isn't an SAS. But thank you for giving me the opportunity. I want to add to the member. I just want to add that maybe there also needs to be a reach out from the Department of Social Development, the Department of Education, because I think it also has to do with career pathing. Mm-hmm. Our children are not really aware, or there's a completely negative message, an image around social work. And I think that needs to be restored, because without those people, we won't be able to do anything really. So I would advise that the department really speaks to the Department of Education and that career pathing do not only start in grade 10, but in grade 8 already. I think that we're really very late with the career path in grade 10. Many of our children or young people leave school in grade 10. So if we give them something to think about, something interesting, make it interesting, the career path, then I'm sure that we will be able to have, say, in the next 3 years, 4 years, maybe, or let's rather make it 10 years, we'll be sure that we will have enough social workers maybe. And then I am going to challenge the department to keep me just, because I hear that you're saying 20 million from the European Union you have. Please do not spend it the last quarter of the financial year next year. I see that it is spent right through the year. And I would want the department maybe just to comment what really happens in the department that money is left What is it so that we can maybe advise, or that we can look at certain innovations or interventions? Because we really have to get behind it. It's not just about understanding rolling over of funds and so on. We really have to get behind what is it, why is the fund kept for the last minute? Other than, I mean, I need to call it the government, because I want to help.
And also, no, let me not use the office. Thank you. Let's get sorry about what he said about spending. I think it is also a matter of planning ahead. You know, we have this hockey stick effect just before the budget, because you know you're going to be wrapped over the knuckles because there's money that hasn't been spent. And you need to know that this is properly budgeted for right from the beginning. But coming back to social workers, is also my passion. I think social workers are very often not only motivated by poor salary, but it is also by workload. There are far too many of them. At least there are far too many, social workers. So the, you know, the caseload is just too high, and people get demotivated. And I don't know whether there is sufficient to do things for social workers. The same as in our police, I've been on the last of support. The circumstances of the work they do is so difficult, very often it's heartbreaking. And if you're not in the GP, you're not going to be able to keep up the pace. And this is why people do drop out and go for alternative types of experiments.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll try to respond, but this time now I'll ask. Yesterday I was alone, today my DDGCS will assist in answering and also Ms. Molloy in terms of the services provided to children who are experiencing or witnessing domestic violence, and the other question that was related to the shelter. Let me start with the EU one of 20 million. I just need to mention the economy that it is not within the department. We have an implementing partner, which is UNODC, United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. So we spend it through the UNODC. We have a project plan from the inception of the project until December 2010, because it ends in 2010, with clear key result areas which EU will come and monitor at the end of the project. So all the funds are allocated per key result area, and it's not within the department. So be rest assured, it's not something that we spend in the last quarter. In fact, it's funds that are not in line with even our financial year end. It is within a UN agency. We spend it according to the...
What is it called again?
It is called United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime.
Okay.
UNODC is their acronym.
So you cannot lay your hands on it?
We lay our hands through our knees. We say, okay, we want to do this in line with the care of our people. They listen to us and try their in terms of the agreed, signed agreement in terms of the deliverable.
Can I get the details of who is the contact person? Can we get the details of the contact
person? I'm the contact person.
You're the contact person. So you were the...
Yes. And then the social workers, I'll try to attend them to add. We do have a recruitment and retention strategy in the department. We also have a scholarship program. Treasury funded us. We are recruiting social workers. We're giving them bursaries to study social work. And we also visit schools. We have a career fair program also where we visit schools to recruit students, new students, to really apply and be interested in studying social work. We also... yes, that's why I said communication and marketing is a problem.
But recently there was a radio advert.
There was also a radio advert where we were indicating when the closing date, we invite you.
I never listened to the radio.
Even on the TV,
it was TV and radio.
Okay, but I don't think that's
We come from different constituencies, so we could actually make your work easier. You understand? If we were involved as this committee, well, I don't know if it has to do with the social development, but I'm just advising that you could take up on board on some of the issues. You know, to say, as a department, this is what we have. You can sell the ideas to your community, to your constituency.
It's just that I would like to learn, but we need to take care of our work. Because even when it comes to balance now, you know, we work in terms of the environment. So I would like to learn from that.
If I can just finalize that issue of social workers, we also have an infrastructure plan as a department because we realize that accommodation also in rural areas is a problem to retain social workers. It's true, it's not only about money, it's about the working conditions. So we are also improving the working conditions. In terms of debriefing, in each and every office in the province, we have an EAP service where such debriefing is done when it's needed, because sometimes they do shoot themselves in front of a social worker, so there are services that are provided for our social workers. And then employee assistance program, and then also the training, the retention and recruitment talks about training, because it's not only about giving them accommodation, giving them money. You need to keep on training them so that they are also, they, you know, refresh their minds in terms of the type of work they do. Home-based supervision, we have stipulated also a document. I know maybe it may not make sense now. We have also printed it, but if the committee feels next time we can be invited to go into detail in terms of those specific programs.
Because we will be going on oversight.
Oh.
That's what you tell us.
Yes.
Well, are you doing what you tell us?
Yes.
And just to say that, not long from now, I'm not sure, but then you will be having public hearing. We will invite you so you can hear for yourself what people are saying.
Yes. And also with the residential care, we have a list. I've provided a list in terms of where they are. They can be visited. It's in terms of each province and each district or area where this center is located and each bed capacity. Maybe what we need to do is the contact details that we need to provide so that at least you can on your own phone the very people who are instead of phoning,
who
will send it to the secretary.
Because
the supplementary information chair, it's got details in terms of KZN. In the presentation, I've summarized it to the 16. But in the supplementary information, it tells you where is the 16 in details and what is the name. The names are there, and the not in the direct, in the supplementary information, it's like, I don't know, it's like this one.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the on the 3S, I think it's quite valid request. We will indicate what amounts have been allocated or what amounts are available for Child Justice Act, for Domestic Violence Act, and then we will submit it also via our parliamentary office to the secretary.
We need to be seen as doing something around the issue of the amount of people stupefied that are being committed by our kids. It's unbelievable. I wish you could share the job.
Sorry.
It's private.
Yeah.
Okay.
So look, can we deal with the issue of children who are witnessing the domestic violence and the services we provide?
Okay, in the child justice, we do render psychotherapy services,
programs like play therapy, and also trauma counseling, with the aid of also high support, the quality of support for court, for all our children and business for this
Access of shelters for people with disabilities.
There is accessibility for people with disabilities in all the shelters, but what we have also agreed with our counterparts in the student nation is that with our people with disability unit, we have the strategy that we're also going to train our service providers to ensure that all the services meet the requirement of accessing services to our able or the people with disabilities, so that they understand how to deal.
On the issue of scholarship, I just wanted to inform the members that last year we had 800, more than 828 social workers who graduated on the scholarship program. And in this current financial year, we've got more than 6,000 students on the scholarship program at the department. And then we also have a learning kit program for social auxiliary workers who are assisting the social workers, supporting the social workers. I don't have the numbers, you can send those numbers. And in addition, we are looking at social service professions in general, not only looking at the services delivered by social workers, but by other social service professions. Social auxiliary workers, child and youth care workers, we are still missing related to the visa so that they can be fully professional within also the workforce services sector. So there's more that I think we are doing. When we costed the Children's Act, we realized that we needed more resources than we currently have at that time. And there's been a lot of improvement. Some of the universities are based in other schools, like the University of the Fort Hare. They have more than 900 social work students, and the lecturers are fewer. So we are engaging the Department of Higher Education to see how we can achieve those universities that are taking more students and they have fewer resources. Because we are also worried about the quality of our graduates. So if we don't graduate young people that are unable to tackle the social problems that they are facing.
Thank you very much. What's the question? But can we also, our advice would be as a committee that we do agree at times that there is some level of good work that you people are doing. But you are unable to measure your performance.
Mm-hmm.
You are unable to tell us, to say this was our target, this is what we have reached, this is what we are unable to reach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just, you know, in Zulu we say, ni pandele muva njengenkulu.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot use the money that is allocated to you,
then we will not pass your budget. And we will all the problems that we have had. Then you find the department so understanding. It's not fair. Honorable Kekari.
Yeah, that's a quick question to confirm what you're saying. You think how we need social workers to help you? What is very important is to do an analysis how many you need. I mean, you can say we produce 900 days a year. If you need 5,000, that is still nothing.
Yeah.
So when Jefferson say, you give us a target and say, these are the needs in terms of social workers, we need so many and this is so much that you are producing. That will you produce. But that's what I mean, say we're producing 900 without changing the needs of the department, that doesn't make sense.
Okay. Now we can provide that information. So each department, each province has got a kind of number of social workers for the next 3 years because we are relying on funding from the treasury for the funding of the treasury scheme. When we costed the children act, we for the 2006 the that scheme indicated that we needed 16,000 social workers. And at that time we had 11,000 social workers. But across the board, doing providing services in the services across the board to older persons, people with disabilities, you know, to women, children, everybody. But that was only for children. And as a result, that we have we're trying to move forward. And at that time, we're only thinking of social workers, but not looking at the social service profession personnel in general. So we're trying to reconcile all these issues so that we look at, you know, the human resources that we have to deliver all these services.
I know some of them are difficult, but, you know, at one stage I went to I saw somebody that had a problem, so I went to the social development office and got there. But eventually I had to sit throughout the day, you know, just sitting there and watching. I was surprised that almost one social worker assisted one client a day. I could not believe it. Today, one person today. We're not taking their own time. I couldn't believe it. I know sometimes those things are beyond your control, but just you need to set some kind of a target. To say, today, I mean, what stops us from saying that? What is happening? What is stopping us? To say, today, you must have a 10 people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if we don't say that, one social worker or one staff member will deal with one client per day.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's going to question that person. So things like that, then we can say we are working.
Yeah.
The whole day I sat there watching.
I
don't know what was that thing. I couldn't understand.
That's not the norm.
I'm telling you, the following day I went there to check what I had come for the previous day was done. The social worker said, I didn't ever try to go there. I had to take her in my own vehicle to those children. Some things like that. You know, just that hide and seek. Sort of, it's not right for our people. It's really not right. Because we are all going to be judged on the basis of our performance, all of us.
Yeah.
I'm a politician and you're a director. No one is going to escape. We have the human number now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's say thanks for now. It's a pity that we have such a small venue. I don't know if you're going to sit and be part of the next presentation so you can, you know, almost understand what is going on. Because we're not thinking of the house coming to cover.
The children's session.
I think we are behind.
Yeah.
Can you move quickly through that?
Yeah. Okay.
But still, you're not going to be part of
help when they are in our presence. Again, we move through the children. This time they're just, you know, our session.
Amended because God has section it was split into two, section 75 and section 76. Section 75 is the one that is referred to Act number 38 of 2005, and then in 2007 we dealt with section 76, which deals with services that are provided by provinces, and that was finalized in 2007. So the World Act is referred to as the Children's Act as amended in 2005. These are the objectives of the Act is the preservation, is the protection of all children in the following manner: the preservation and strengthening of families, to give effect to the following constitutional rights of children. That slide is not in your slide. We'll provide this to the secretariat so that they can print your slide for you. Family care. This only these two, this part and the next one. Sorry. Family care and parental care or appropriate alternative care when removed from the family environment. The right to social, these rights are of course in section 28 of the Constitution. Yeah, there's a Bill of Rights. The protection from maltreatment, neglect, abuse and degradation. The paramountcy of the best interest of the child. Everything that you do, it must be the best interest of the child, not the best interest of the adult. To give effect to the Republic's obligation concerning international instruments binding on the Republic to make provision for structured services means for promoting and monitoring the sound physical, psychological, intellectual, emotional, and social development of the children. I think what members have been raising, the concerns they have been raising regarding children on the ground who are not receiving services, this legislation responds to that. To strengthen and develop community structures which can assist in providing care and protection for children, to recognize the special needs that children with disabilities and chronic illnesses may have. The portfolio committee of social development that worked on this emphasized that every service that will be provided through this legislation must take into cognizance the needs of children with disabilities and make provision for them. This is the content of the legislation. There's a different chapter. I don't think I should go through them. I hope the members have got the legislation itself, the copies of the Children's Act. But it is available on the web, on the internet, on the website. I'll just go quickly through the chapters. Chapter 1 deals with interpretation, objects, application, and implementation of the Act. Chapter 2 deals with children's rights and deals with issues such as the best interests of the child participation, social, cultural, religious practices, access to children's court, and the age of the majority. For example, the issue that was discussed in the Portfolio Committee on Social Development yesterday on the forced marriages, it is provided for in section 12 of this legislation that the forced marriages is prohibited in this legislation. Chapter 3 deals with all matters pertaining to parental responsibilities and rights agreements and the assignment of parental responsibilities and rights by order of court. It provides for the rights of fathers. It provides for parenting plans. Now, if parents are split, can have parenting plans on how they are going to share their responsibility and rights with regard to that child. And it also makes provision for children conceived by artificial fertilization. Chapter 4 is a chapter that is specifically dealt with provided for by the Department of Justice. It deals with the functioning powers, jurisdiction of children's court, the conduct of proceedings before the children's court, presiding officers, and the like. Justice is also responsible for developing regulations for this chapter. Chapter 5, 6, 7, 8, 11, 12, 13, and 14 are the chapters that deal with provincial competences regarding service delivery to children. Is this the services, for example, the child protection, the alternative care, foster care, child and youth care centers, and campuses, the children's homes, places of safety, and reform schools of industry and the like. And drop-in centers are those centers where especially for three children and orphans go and get food and get some psychosocial support. Yeah. Adoptions, their daycare center rather than, you know, residential centers. And then it's got adoptions. The provinces are also to a certain extent responsible for adoptions. Then the chapter 7 is as part of the Act. It provides for the national protection registers A and B. Currently it's got register A, which captures information about all the children that have been reported to be abused and neglected. Chapter B deals with people who have been found unsuitable to work with children. There are processes that are outlined in the Act which indicate how you come to pronouncing a person as unsuitable to work with children, people who committed crimes against children. there is a discussion at the moment to merge this chapter with this register, with the register which is in the Sexual Offences Act on the register on pedophiles. And then it also deals, this chapter deals with matters relating to health of children, the health of children, consent to medical treatment, and HIV and AIDS testing of children. And it also makes provision for childhood and households. It recognizes the fact that children who've been left on their own should be regarded as children in need of care and protection and taken through the children's court processes so that protective measures can be implemented. Chapter 9 deals with the child in need of care and protection. It's especially section 150 of this chapter deals with how do we define a child who is in need of care and protection. And the actions that have been taken with regard to these children. Chapter 10 deals with contribution orders. If your child happens to be found in need of care and protection and you earning a good salary, you have to contribute towards the upkeep of that child in alternative care. And this chapter deals with how that contribution will be dealt with, whether it should go straight to the agency that is looking after the child or go through the state. Chapter 16 respectively deals with adoption, and it's also chapter 16 deals with inter-country adoption and to give effect to the Hague Convention of Inter-Country Adoption. We've got many visitors who come in this country and they're really clamoring for our children, they want to adopt our children, and this chapter will ensure that we have mechanisms in place to ensure that our children are not trafficked out of the country. They are properly adopted through the measures that are provided in this chapter. Chapter 19 introduces new legislation in South Africa with regard to surrogate motherhood. And then Chapter 20 provides for the enforcement of the Act. And there are two chapters that are missing: a child trafficking and the child abduction. And then the Children's Act has been costed, as I said earlier. I don't think I'll say more. Mm-hmm. The only thing that the results of the costing reveal that the Act creates additional responsibility on the state to make plans and encourage and develop a range of new services. This Act comes with new services. For example, early childhood development is no longer regarded as a center, it's regarded as a program. So as a department, we need to ensure that there are programs in place for ECD. Partial care is a facility where services to children, will be delivered from, especially daycare services. We've got the child and youth care centers, we are no longer referring them to them as decent people, children's homes and so on. It will depend upon the needs of children, how these children are placed in these centers. Dropping centers is also new. And we've got new chapters which deal with prevention and early intervention, which are new. In the previous act, it went straight into statutory intervention when the child is already found to be vulnerable. But this legislation has made sure that there will be programs in place for prevention of children being found in need of care and protection. And the Act requires additional human resources, especially social workers and social service professionals. I think what I need to mention here is that the new obligations also are extended to other departments, the Department of the Police, Department of Health, Justice, mm-hmm. and the Department of the Education, both. I think it's mainly basic education mm-hmm. that is implicated here, because we're dealing with children under the age of 18, and the Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Department. The municipalities, their responsibilities in this legislation is with regard to ECD, yes. partial care, and working centers. The provincial head of department, in agreement with many municipalities, can designate those services to the municipality, to the management in the municipality. Pardon? This legislation says it should happen. There are resource municipalities that can start, that are already providing services. For example, there are a number of municipalities that are providing ECD services. And I think those municipalities that are found to be capacitated sufficiently, these services can be designated to them. And this new legislation, I think, talking about the designation, it also designates certain services like prevention and early intervention to the NGO sector. But the NGO sector has been broadened up because it is the prevention and early intervention services are now statutory services. So those NGOs can even the CDOs at sport community level can now register as child protection organizations. Okay, I'll skip this. The regulations, I think I'm going to allow Mr. Lisele to talk about the regulations after I've done this, because he's here. Okay. The national policy framework strategy, we have developed a national policy framework that will enable us to develop and to implement this legislation. That policy will be finalized by end of September. A lot of the NGO sector and the government sector and everyone concerned have been participating in the development of this policy. This policy was initially required by the bill, initial bill that came to Parliament, but it had to be taken out because legislation doesn't deal with policy issues, it really deals with regulating policies. Monitoring and evaluation, we have a monitoring and evaluation framework in place specifically for this legislation, and it will be ready when the legislation is put in place. And training guidelines, we have a training program in place. We are now at phase one and two and are completed. Phase one is the type of training that can be made available to anyone, even at community level. The training should be extended to even to parents, to children, so that they it's basic for the understanding of the legislation. If the members want to be trained on the legislation, we can make sure that we extend this training to ourselves. And then we've got the advanced, the intermediate, advanced, and so on. Some of these spaces are still being developed. And then this is all about the training that we've done. We've been as the legislation is developed. Parallel to that, we provided the provincial department, officials in the department, with some form of briefings and training on this legislation. We have started in May with the development of norms and standards and guidelines for the implementation of complementary to both the regulations, the policy and the training. And we have an intersectoral steering committee on the Children's Bill, which was developed in 2005. And this committee included all the relevant departments, including this department that of this portfolio committee when it was being referred to as the ORC in the presidency. Beyond the bill processes, we have now developed a child care and protection forum, which includes all the stakeholders that have to assist in the implementation of this. This forum meets on a regular basis. I think it's a quarterly basis. They've been assisting us with developing all these tools that we need for the implementation of the Act. And after the Act has been implemented, the forum will continue to ensure that we monitor together the implementation of this legislation, to ensure that each department, each sector, do their part as far as the implementation is concerned. Communication, we have developed a DVD, the training DVD is quite very light, and it's 1 hour, 60 minutes. And it's an easier way of training people on the legislation. The USID assisted us with funding to develop this. We've also developed, through UNICEF support, three friendly law literacy booklets, which have been developed, which can be distributed even at community level, can be used by adults and both adults and children. These booklets are ready, they are just being printed now, for dissemination purposes. We're also using, on a regular basis, media, both electronic and print media, with regards to the implementation of this Act, popularizing it, making people aware. Our Millicent Jackson Minister, when they go on air, they always talk about some of the chapters in this. The one that we are focusing on currently is adoption. The Minister says she wants to see everyone in this case, who's got the capacity to be adopting children rather than leaving children in alternative care. The way forward is that we have finalized the regulation. The promulgation of the Act, of course, depends on the finalization of the regulations and then being approved by the respective ministers, the Minister of Social Development and the Minister of Justice. And the implementation plans, all the provinces are developing implementation plans. We went through the all the provinces in during August and this month to look at their state of readiness, and we'll have that report very soon. If you need it, it can be provided with the report. It looks at the various chapters of this legislation, how each province is ready in terms of its implementation, and the resources that they've made available for the implementation of the legislation. The policy framework has spoken to that, the MNE is ready, the training guidelines, some places are ready, and the non-standard standards and practice guidelines are the ones that are outstanding, but we are working on them now. Thank you very much. Mr. Lucello, talk a little bit about the regulation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The implementation of this Act is dependent on us finalizing the regulations. Now, there are two sets of regulations. The one in respect of the whole Act, which must be published, which must be drafted and finalized by the Department. The other one relates to Chapter 4, which deals with the Children's Court. And that is the responsibility of the Department of Justice. And as far as the part that relates to the Department is concerned, what I can say to this committee is the following, that we have drafted the regulations. There are minor things that we are currently looking at, and we should be able to finalize them before the end of this month. But when we presented the regulations last time to the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, when we presented the do a presentation on the specific act, the Children's Act and its implementation. There was a view that we don't need to approach National Treasury for their concurrence because the Act was silent on whether or not National Treasury must concur to the final draft of the regulation. And at that stage, we said, like, now that you consulted National Treasury and the bill was costed, there was no need for the Department to again go to National Treasury and seek its concurrence. But subsequent to that presentation, I have seen a letter coming from the Minister of National Treasury, the Minister of Finance, in which the Minister was suggesting that there are the issues around the affordability of the whole implementation of the Act may come into play, but the Minister was suggesting that maybe we need to have a further approach. Our minister may still have to have a discussion with National Treasury to see. They may have had a discussion and they may have agreed on the actual implementation, but we don't have that feedback. But what I'm suggesting is that I don't want to say here that we'll finalize the bill by the resolution by the end of this month, and therefore the act can come into operation, because the two ministers must meet and then agree on whether or not it is affordable. Because they could, I saw that, but I don't know how it was ultimately agreed. But the second dependence is related to Chapter 4. You can't implement the act because, I mean, the whole act alone, unless justice has finalized its part, Chapter 4, which deals with the Children's Court. And there's quite a lot of provisions of this act which are dependent on the existence or at least the finalization of the chapter dealing, the regulations dealing with the Children's Court. I also know that at one stage, justice was saying they were not ready. I'm not sure how far currently justice is, which is also going to affect our ability to implement the whole act. That we still have to have a discussion with National Treasury. What, and I'm not justice, but I know also that our minister and our DG must also meet the DG of Justice and also the Minister of Justice on the issues related to Chapter 4 of the act, that is the regulations related to Chapter 4 of the act. What we have also thought we could possibly do is to say, in case justice is not ready, let's look at which part provisions of the act can we then implement while we are waiting for justice to finalize its part. And it's made that submission to the minister and the DG to say, in case we don't succeed, justice is not ready, let's then look at certain provisions of this act which can be implemented even in the absence of the regulations in terms of Chapter 4 of the act. I'm not sure, maybe Agnes Miller could assist on whether there has been justice has finalized its part, because I know that there was an indication that justice could be ready. And I'm not sure whether you are in a position to
for all the departments to work together. Right
now,
your right hand doesn't know
what's left of the relationship.
That's why you're not sure how far justice is.
Madam Chair, yeah, I would say we are not sure, but it would also seem our priorities are not the same. For us, the Children's Act is a priority. But justice could be concentrated on something. And it depends on how they budgeted for all these things. And in our case, we are saying we are ready, but justice may not be ready. Thank you.
One dependency as well. Once the minister wants to have this process of justice are finalized, he has to meet with her counterpart in the province, with the MEC, and finally agree on the date of the promulgation of the act. Because this act depends quite a lot on the readiness at the provincial level to implement it. We don't want to take provinces by surprise and find we are in disarray instead of really providing services as we should.
So I think
you have to move
very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, all what we are doing will be just a mockery. Mm-hmm. That's why we find out that actually our virginity systems are so great and we come to mm-hmm. the because we are not implementing. Members, can we leave it at that?
I think you have more or less, you do have an idea of what you want.
Morning, Chapter 7. My name is Joe Carter. I'm the parliamentary officer in the minister's office.
And I'm coming to the director general.
Okay, sir. You are going to brief us today on the 7th of November to the victims of the domestic violence.
Thank you, Chair. There is a document circulated with the presentation.
Remember that all the copies. Okay,
Chair. Thank you, Chair, and members. The invitation said we must address this question of services rendered to victims of domestic violence and abuse. But we thought we should actually interpret that in a broader sense, because all our services are available to all kinds of victims, including victims of domestic abuse and so on. But there are specific ones that are related to certain aspects. So we'll address the issues of policies, for example, what kind of policy and treatment guidelines as services are actually available, as well as the specific services. I'm not going to say anything about the... I'm on the third slide, and I'm not going to say much about that, just the contextualization of the, what informs our work in relation to victims, that's what I'm referring to. But in terms of policies, we have a whole range of policies and guidelines that guide our institutions as well as ourselves with regard to how we handle issues of violence, particularly of sexual violence and child violence, etc., etc. The National Sexual Assault Policy Guidelines is actually a guide the clinicians with regard to how they should handle victims of sexual assault. And as you can see, if you're talking about domestic violence only, that might actually be lost, but within that, within the broader sexual assault policy guidelines, we also address that kind of assault. There's also issues of forensic medicine, because it's very, very important for the hospitals, and particularly the clinicians, to be able to ensure that the forensic evidence is actually not lost in relation to the victims of violence, sexual violence, etc., and domestic violence. There are also other policies that are just broadly gender policy guidelines for public health services. We have the service charter for booklets for victims of crime in South Africa, which is also applicable. Then you'll find that the patient rights charter addresses itself to a whole range of rights issues within the institution and the health sector. In other words, what are the rights of the patient, the right to confidentiality, the right to be treated with dignity, etc. When it comes to children, you also have guidelines for management of child abuse, neglect, and exploitation. And that of course, would relate to children as victims of different kinds of domestic violence and abuse. Finally, of course, with children, you also try to locate that within the broader management of child illnesses, and we integrated what we call the IMCI in the context of health. So basically what we're saying is that the policy environment actually is meant to address this, and is very conducive at a policy level. The question of implementation would then be the next question. With regard to the services provided by the Department of Health in relation to the policies that I've just outlined, all our injuries and trauma victims are seen at primary healthcare facilities, outpatient departments at hospitals, and emergency casual departments at hospitals. In other words, our clinics are accessible to victims of injuries and trauma within the domestic environment and abuse. Also, our OPDs hospital OPDs, as well as the emergency and casualty departments, those services are available. They are no at that level, you do not have a kind of specialized service that says you will see an outpatient a patient in a separate service from those. But of course, within that context, therefore, staff is actually trained in various situations to identify victims of sexual assault and abuse in particular. And all public hospitals, and almost more than 50% of our community health centers at the moment, are designated to provide services to victims of sexual assault and abuse, including the provision of post-exposure prophylaxis. Now, that means that if individuals visit hospitals and visit 50% of our community health centers, they will actually find specialized attention with regard to their victimhood, as it were. But as is suggested here, 50% so far of those community health centers have been designated. Our aim is to ensure that all community health centers, if you know our structure, you have clinics and community health centers, and then you have the hospitals and so forth. We would want all our community health centers to be able to be designated for this purpose, so that our clinics are able to refer the people immediately to those. And then we have 16 Tutuzela centers which are located within the public hospitals. Now these centers are specifically geared towards victims of sexual assault, particularly rape. And therefore, even with rape in the domestic environment, the Tutuzela centers would be able to actually handle this. This is an integration or a cooperation between our health services and the safety and security services, the police services, so that and the prosecution services, so that all those processes that the Tutuzela centers actually happen at the same time, not being moved from one pillar to another, to go to the police now to make a statement, to do all sorts of things. So there is an integration which actually brings possibilities of conviction should there be a trial. It brings it to about 90% at the moment. In other words, conviction rates from people who actually do come to the Tutuzela Center and are processed there is actually currently at 90% of those people. But of course, 16 Tutuzela centers are not enough. We have to try and expand those services. Of course, working with the Department of Police, the prosecution elements, etc., etc., and that's what we're trying to do. Also, the youth-friendly services. We are accrediting some institutions, some clinics, some community centers, as well as some hospitals into what we call youth-friendly hospitals. And by that, we mean hospitals that are actually going to be sensitive to the needs of the young people in particular, who are either victims of domestic violence or abuse, or have they are neglected young people. But broadly speaking, all young people, not just the victims of domestic violence, find themselves having much more comfort in going to such centers, because there are certain criteria that we put in place for what a youth-friendly service should be like, and in terms of staff, in terms of attitudes, in terms of privacy, and in terms of all sorts of other things. But I also... Well, the youth-friendly centers are actually, as I say, we have a set of indicators for declaring a community center a youth-friendly center, which actually are criteria that have been agreed upon working with the youth desk of the presidency and other youth formations. So, for example, young people, particularly when it comes to issues such as TOP, termination of pregnancy, young people find it very difficult to just walk into a hospital. Maybe their parents are also linked to that hospital because the people who work there know them or something like that. But if they have a youth-friendly entrance and all those other things where young people are comfortable to, and they work with other young people who understand their plight. So from time to time, those centers are actually monitored and reported on by the people themselves who actually get those services.
Are these actually situated at the hospital?
In some, yeah. At the clinic or hospital. In other words, a hospital to qualify to be declared a youth-friendly hospital has to meet certain criteria. Yes. Yeah. To qualify as a clinic also, to be a youth-friendly clinic. And some of them will say we want to convert into a youth-friendly clinic because of how it's interacting with the young people. So we then ensure that those services are there. Of course, there are also referrals to social workers and psychologists, etc. In the context of this. So, Chairperson and honorable members, we must say that, of course, the problem with this, or the challenge that we have, is indeed a general challenge of availability of health professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So answer. If you have a problem of availability of health professionals, usually the sort of specialized type of services do suffer because they have to deal with all sorts of people because they are limited capacity. Whereas we would have wanted at least some of the health professionals, nurses, doctors, and psychologists to be a little bit specialized in relation to issues of sexual violence, rape, etc., and domestic violence. So, if you look at the next slide, we also talk about clinical forensic medicine, which is also our responsibility. We provide clinical forensic medicine services to victims of sexual abuse in all provinces, of course, there are those. And this is one area where we can safely say that South Africa is facing a very, very big challenge. Because the forensic evidence, the forensic skills are actually limited. And if you look at the when we transferred the forensic laboratories as well as the forensic, as well as the mortuaries to the Department of Health away from the police, one of the issues that actually became very clear to us as health is that this category of employees is a very limited category. Hence the backlog of cases in the... Now, when you have a general problem like that, which is just a forensic analyst and so on, again, it will actually impact on victims of sexual abuse. However, we do try to ensure that at least within the clinics themselves, the kind of forensic evidence necessary for conviction is not necessarily interfered with. People know how to handle people. They don't say go and wash yourself or do all sorts of things like that without necessarily looking at what impact that it has on the case. And we have failed, capacitated or trained health professionals, 450 doctors and nurses, to ensure that they are sensitive to the psychological state of victims, to taking the history of the case, the history of abuse, specimens on legal and ethical grounds in relation to how to treat people, so that the evidence can stand a legal test in the court. Of course, 450 across the country is not enough, but that's more or less linked more to these 50 community centers and the Tutuvela centers, etc. And that needs to be expanded. But as I say, it's impacted upon by the shortage of testament in general. I'm going to skip slide 7 because this is just a reflection of the fact that as part of these services, we're also a part of the activities as the health center with regards to activism, not just on the 16 days but across the board, but within the context of the 16 days of activism, we engage different fora. Now, in this regard, you will know that as the health sector, we are responsible for also dealing with the main issue of HIV and AIDS. Unfortunately, in the days of HIV, you cannot divorce domestic violence, sexual assault from the challenges of prevention and so on. Hence my allusion to post prophylactic treatment, as well as other issues of treatment that are actually there. So within that context, all the fora that are actually led by the Department of Health related to HIV and AIDS, we've put this issue of domestic violence and empowerment, etc., as one of the key issues that we all address. Now, in summary, some of the challenges that we face in this regard relate to intersexual collaboration, especially at district level. I've alluded to intersexual collaboration between the police, for example, the social work services, and our services, as well as the prosecution services. But, of course, these need to be strengthened. They are still largely dependent on the individuals and their passions for these kinds, on the individuals and their passions. for these kinds of issues. So we need to actually institutionalize this intersectional collaboration. Of course, the Tutuvela Center has given us a very good model for institutionalization. But of course, we need to ensure that in every district, this kind of institutionalization is there. The training of health workers in these issues I've alluded to. The challenge, of course, is the special challenges. You will find this special challenges, facility challenges, in many of our specialized treatment areas. If you take, for example, the issue of HIV, even though people talk about people's status needing to be protected, but I mean, if you can go visit hospitals now, particularly those that are actually accredited, you can just stand there and you'll know who's coming in for what purposes. Precisely because you have a situation of infrastructure challenges. So similarly, yeah, part of the challenge of the Chuchuzela Center is that one, is that you can already immediately see this is a victim of sexual assault because it's going to that Chuchuzela Center. And if you had infrastructure that was protected, where people could actually keep their confidentiality, etc., then you... So that challenge is actually there. People who are traumatized will still go to an outpatient department and perhaps later can be picked up to be referred to the relevant section in many of our hospitals. So you do have that kind of challenge. Of course, the other problem is the issue of follow-up. And again, it's linked to integration, yeah, because you can follow up from a medical and a health point of view. But of course, you have to have other services that ensure that people don't go back to the same environment in the domestic context. Mm. And as honorable members would know, that's always the problem, that people have to go back to the same context, and therefore they become repeat victims from time to time, and that creates a whole range of problems. So in general, our services, even though they are actually available broadly, we are trying to build specialized services, particularly for sexual abuse as well as child abuse. Otherwise, the other general violence in the family would actually still be treated in general as any other violence, you know, when you are injured, so that's why it's necessary for us to look at this integration. And one of the key issues about that is the availability of social workers in our institutions. So that's the challenge which we are trying to address with social development through the program, which is in the program of action of the social and community development cluster, for the training of social workers and the expansion of the pool. Because we would then benefit as the health sector, counseling services, and social services. Chair, we will be ready to answer questions from my colleagues in the specific context.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Around the issue of
because it's more of a presentation than from different in relation to the matter you're talking about. But the management in South Africa is rooted. It's separated into public and private. Private is able to very expensive but can give you the system. Public is very reasonable but you get the worst service. And this is as a result of the fact that the majority of the people that ask me do not have the means to go to the private. And therefore they all come and condemn inside public facilities. What plans does the department have to handle that particular challenge or to mitigate on the extent of it being either state as core or west? That is the first question I would like to ask. I think this is a follow-up question.
Thank you, Jason. I have been talking to you before I read your presentation, but I'm new to this. What I'd like to ask myself is, I know it is a challenge the way that you speak. And I'm speaking about, by speaking to the folks of the doctors and nurses that are training. I would like to know from the department, so people have to have a plan in place. They have to agree, provide us with a plan. How are they going to do things that is a matter of trying to stress? Because they have to feel very loud. Because I'll take the example of what I saw in me when it comes to Jay of the Exxon. The doctors are afraid to assist them. And that is definitely not the problem. Because I saw it at the kitchen stone. When a victim was there, how long that he worked for the Livingston Hospital to be the jail at the office. Then when it comes to a rape case, there's a rape case. And it's quite a process. Those things are worrying factors. Because many times, nurses are not doing these things at the rape case. Although you say that you need training. So I think, you know, we should have this plan in our family, specialized doctors and nurses will need when it comes to domestic violence or violence itself, sexual violence, and how are you going to progress towards that? And then when it comes to, because I know sometimes, although we see it 90%, there's a rate of conviction when it comes to 90% of your cases. And then the other thing that I want to ask the department, what I found out too, you know, when it comes to your integrated approach or positive approach, whatever approach you use, a people are complaining this week, and that is the center run by Justice, the one stop youth, Justice Center, I haven't got all the complaints there. That is one struggle with psychology. And I ask the question, why don't you collaborate with staff? Because psychologists are doing. So I think a person may have to speak to what is your relationship with the different person and how do you help them so that they can implement service delivery on the ground. I don't want that. Thank you.
Thank you, Hesperson. My first question is on the presentation that you've just done for us. On the notes here, you've written 10 to the centers, but I heard you say 15, so there is a different thing. And I must say that I'd like to congratulate the department with that, because I think we are in this committee representing women, and disabled people. And the trauma that these people go through when you go to a general hospital. And maybe this center will really help and assist. And for the next step, that's all
there is more than one department that is able to assist people under one roof, and I think it makes everybody's life easy. I wanted to know that we spoke about health professionals that were trained, 450 of them trained. What is the target, and how many actually do we need? And is there a monitoring system in place to see that they are giving the kind of service that they are supposed to be giving to people? Because we know the service that is given to the general public in our public hospital. Thank you.
Okay.
The child-friendly services, which is focusing on children, the youth-friendly services, because the young people tell you that our hospitals in general may not be friendly to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Tutuzela centers, which are friendly to victims of sexual, you know. So it's different kinds of services that we're trying to address a different audience. So we generalize all the time to say, go to Ilindele Hospital.
Cheaper.
And that's what
you do. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I just want to know where these people are going to go. Where are they going? And then what are they going to get? I think they don't have any money, but I want to know where they are. And I know there's been a problem with getting these going as far as funding is concerned. And because they are probably quite widely distributed in the country, how have you managed to get the evidence, the forensic evidence, the numbers, whatever, from the victim in the back of the yard in the Eastern Cape or the Popo to your forensic centre? Are you sure that you are getting service delivery sent and getting there soon enough that you can have accurate results?
In addition, when you answer, you get to the victim in the case of domestic abuse. Most of them end up in places like a children's mental hospital. But there is an outcry that you have actually stopped this danger alarm. Well, some of them are very minor. Why did this danger alarm stop? The nurses and the caregivers, the acting hospitals, why have you stopped this danger alarm? Okay, let's give you a chance to answer.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, to the members for the question. I think the first question is about a broader issue of healthcare in South Africa. I think perhaps to give a quicker answer, one of the fundamental reasons why the government has adopted the approach of introducing a national health insurance system, precisely to address the question that the honourable member has raised. And I think in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, we will publish a paper, discussion document on the national health insurance, which will address, first of all, why we have this division between the private sector and the public sector. And let me immediately say that does not necessarily follow the public equality. Lack of quality in private equal quality, because we can show you the best public hospitals in South Africa that are far better than your private hospitals, and vice versa too. We can show you the best, especially in terms of value for money, for many of these private hospitals. But basically what's happening is precisely because, if you look at it now, the funding, private healthcare funding spends about 56 to about 65 billion on 7 million South Africans. And the public sector spends 56 billion rand currently to the rest of the median percentage. So in other words, you can see the proportional, the proportion of expenditure. Now, first you have to correct that, otherwise you'll always have that kind of disjunction. And the only way to correct that is to ensure that the resources that are actually being used by the private sector are also part of the pool of resources that must be used by the rest of the public. Hence, you need the National Health Insurance Scheme. And then once you get to that, you're able to then equitably distribute those resources also according to the profile of the individuals that are involved. For example, this 7 million South Africans is actually the 7 healthiest million. You know, as compared to the other 48 million or so, half of which may be actually needing health care. So you have the overseas servicing of people who are healthy and the under servicing of people who are actually need health care. If you put it into a pool, then you'll be able to find that balance. And that will also improve the services because the resources that are there, for example, the human resources that we have in this country are concentrated in the private sector, the doctors. If you are able to pull them such that they are also able to serve the public sector, then you improve, first of all, the availability of personnel, etc., etc. But that's a detailed presentation on its own in relation to what are the plans to deal with this issue of ensuring that South Africans have access to quality care across the board. There are proposals with regard to that. The second issue relates to collaboration. That's the one I'd like to deal with, collaboration with other departments. I think in the past 10 years, that integrated approach to matters of governance has been improving. Very slowly, but improving. For example, the relationship between the Department of Health and Social Development, who tend to have the same services, to go to home and community-based carers, the more or less the same services. To go to the issues of psychologists and social workers, we need the same services as such from both sides. So there's been a lot of collaboration between the two departments, even looking at how we establish such community health workers, community caregivers that are not going to be crowding a family, for example. If you have a person who's coming saying, I'm coming to look at your child support grant, tomorrow you've got another one who says, I'm a job supporter, you've got another one who says, I'm coming to look after an HIV patient, another one. That creates problems for the family. So we're actually working very closely to creating categories of professionals, which would include auxiliary social work counseling services. These people would have those kinds of skills, and it gives us a larger pool. That work of collaboration at that level is actually taking place. It's still at the training level, but also in the various sites. We don't have many psychologists ourselves. We're looking at, for example, how to integrate our services with the schools, because, again, school health service is a very, very important prevention, primary health care approach that we would want to use. So integration for us is fundamental, particularly also because from a health point of view, most of the issues we address in health don't come basically from just your health as such. They come from the social determinants, such as lack of water, sanitation, all those things, including this victimhood. When there's trauma in the streets of Joburg because people have been having a heist, or because people are driving drunk, then the health sector feels the pressure So for the pressure to be released, we must address this question of alcohol abuse and those attitudes. What belongs to us is the treatment. We treat and care. At the end of the day, we must prevent that. So we are part of it, of the prevention strategy through the social cluster and also treatment. So I'm painting a broader picture in order to come to this issue of saying all kinds of violence generally relates to the alcohol abuse as the one number one issue. And health only deals with the consequences of that. So what we say is in the social sector we need to address this question of alcohol abuse. Our role in health within that context is to pass the necessary regulations, for example, in relation to alcohol and its handle, like we've done that in legislation. But there is the need for us, one of the key issues of dealing with domestic violence and all kinds of violence is this issue of alcohol. So that's the integration we look at, but also the provision of services. Yes, we find our psychological services in the hospital. So it's a broader issue that we need to, we are trying and continuing to improve. Let me address the forensic services part, and then my colleague here will deal with, and the danger allowance. Let me start with the danger allowance. What we found with this specific allowance, you know, is that in our context, they end up being eroded in terms of value. Let me take, for example, we had something called the rural allowance.
Mm-hmm.
Then suddenly came the issue of, let me use the example that perhaps members will be familiar with, King Edward Hospital versus Prince Mshiyeni Hospital. The Prince Mshiyeni Hospital, people say, we've been designated the rural hospital, therefore we receive rural allowance. The people in King Edward are not receiving rural allowance. Now, who is rural? In the whole of Limpopo, 90% of it is rural. So the incentive to actually get people to the rural area tends to be then, because now people get money out of it, then everybody then starts arguing and you have industrial action to say, look, we demand to be part of the rural. Then we had the same thing with the scarce skills allowance, because we're focusing on scarce skills. The nurses are a scarce skill now in South Africa, so all of them should be receiving scarce skills. So then the danger allowance is such. We then have this problem. Many of these people work in that environment anyway. Just by virtue of being in a hospital these days is actually also dangerous. So because in many situations it is, because people come in starting their fights wherever, and they shoot each other, they come and finish each other in hospital. We've had instances of that, we can report some of them. You have situations where even within the hospital, people were taking management decisions, and then they actually get victimized. So everybody says, just by being here, not that I agree with them, I'm simply saying they argue that by being in a hospital, in a violent environment, you also have danger. And then we have the problem that we are saying our clinics must open 24 hours, at least largely. People who work at night will tell you we want danger allowance because we work at night. So you end up not necessarily being able to manage, because everybody will say danger allowance and so on. So you'd have to look at rather compensating people for their speciality. That's why we have the occupation-specific dispensation, which is going to say this speciality must be acknowledged and therefore paid, remunerated accordingly, so that people don't say, but I need that allowance and that allowance, because they are recognized to be specialized in a particular way. That we've just introduced that now, the occupation-specific dispensation. Some of the key principles of it is to say people can actually move up to the highest level of salary without leaving their specialty. Because now, in the past, you would have a situation where a nurse must become this and the manager in order to go up, and so on. Whereas you can recognize a specialist, like for example, a nurse who's specializing in theater, a theater nurse, will be paid in accordance with that specialization. And therefore doesn't have to leave the theater to go up in terms of the ladder of salary. So similarly, if we begin to have a specialization of the nature that one envisages in this area, of nurses who are trained and specialized in dealing with women and children who are sexually assaulted and abused, then if it becomes a specialty, it might actually become a specialty eventually. Then those people will be recognized. They don't need to have a gender allowance because there will actually be a specialty that is recognized. We recognize also qualifications in that area. So more qualifications would mean more money rather than gender allowance. Because then everybody then says, what criteria do you use to say this is dangerous and that one is not dangerous?
Then fall short of explaining
to the public. Yeah, of course. If you take people who work in our context today, anybody who comes into contact with blood, danger, H1N1, which is just general. So everybody says this H1N1, and we are exposed, danger now. So those things make it difficult to make a distinction, and so you have to approach it differently. Let's admit the forensic services are actually far from the size of, particularly the laboratories, are far from the size of the, particularly where you're trying to then deal with issues of DNA testing and all sorts of things like that. They are far. As I said, this is one area where generally South Africa is having a problem. In fact, in the previous I don't know whether the Department of Justice is continuing with this. We haven't interacted with them. But in the previous administration, when Deputy Minister Delango was still Deputy Minister, he was given the specific role to try and tender this area of forensic pathology because of the backlogs in the criminal justice system as a result of this. And there are many issues that he found. One of them was indeed the skill shortage. And the other is, because you don't have the skill, you centralize. And therefore, the movement between the kind of periphery to the laboratory at the center is a problem. So it is a challenge that we face to. That's why at the site you have to be able to train both the police and the prosecution people and the health workers to be sure that the specimens that they take are of quality, because if they don't take quality specimens, the case falls. So far, as I said, in the Thuthuzela centers, and I'm only talking about the Thuthuzela centers, which was a pilot to see if we follow this route, what happens. The conviction rate has actually proven that you do need a specialized service of this nature in order to be able to get convictions. Otherwise, if you don't have it, then you have everybody who doesn't know how to handle things. In the context of the challenges that the Honourable Member is talking about, where we cannot meet some of our public hospitals and some of our personnel for various reasons, some just incompetent, but others because of other pressures, trauma, they themselves need occupational help, support, then they behave in very strange ways. I mean, you find people like in the recent exposés in Mpumalanga and so on, you find people who have lost a sense of empathy, and they just look at a person giving death right at the door of the hospital, simply because they say, if I handle you there, then I'm not protected by law, and all that kind of rubbish. So you'll find those kinds of things even here. You can't say they don't. So what I'm saying is, while you can address these issues and try and strengthen them, you have to strengthen the whole health system, as you say, in order to benefit in this area. My colleague will answer the question about the numbers.
I have a question. I actually asked about the forensic library.
how many are at the library laboratory? How many are there and where are they? Do we have one per province, for example? Or if you could just speak?
No. Actually, we have a national forensic laboratory, which is the main. Yes, it is the main forensic laboratory. But they commission certain laboratories for purposes of ensuring that they keep specimens. Okay, so they will say a laboratory in this area and that area. But because they don't have the skills are concentrated in Pretoria.
If I remember correctly, each province was given an allocation for forensic laboratory.
No. It was given an allocation for the upgrading of mortuaries in our conditional grant. It was forensic services, but not laboratory. Forensic services, mortuaries, and you know where people then are going to prepare the evidence to take it to the laboratory. So, Thomas, can you answer the question of the two elephants, the numbers, and the rollout?
Thank you, Chair and CC. The number of the two elephants is the present, we have 16. I heard somebody spoke about has one center in the Eastern Cape or not any. There actually are two. We are in the process together with the DMT, the IED, and the integrated.
Interdepartmental
management team that is headed by SOCA, the Sexual Offences and Community Affairs, in collaboration with UNICEF. We are trying to roll out all these Tutuzela centers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important to know that for a Tutuzela country to be safe, obviously, it's got people who've been trained inside there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they still make the mistake that you said, that they still to complete the GEH form.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know how to use the test kit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I thought honestly, we would be commended for the 450, you know, the government that we have trained. And this is the commended. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. If you recall, in the past, we had district presidents who were in their main private practitioners with very quick, you know, training, who were never available 24 hours, you know, for their patients, and where our people had to wait for hours on end waiting for this district president who was going to come. And besides that, doctors in general, you know, could sort of like manage a patient, but they wouldn't. There was this fear in terms of, you know, case doctors told that I don't want to go to court, they'll miss my time. I'll be seen by the dedicated preachers and be seen as, you know, having given evidence for the patient. There were those kinds of fears. Now, this, the 450, you know, type of nurse and doctor has been trained. This is for all these other areas outside the Tutuzela centers, that is in all the clinics, so that no patient is going to get to any, you know, facility and not get attention. And as I say, these are new, you know, training manuals that we are using. We started piloting last year and we did a few, and now we're also running because we see that this is becoming acceptable. Not only is the focus on our caregivers who are in public facilities, but we are also talking to our colleagues who are in private, because they also see quite a number of patients who have been IDs. The target, like I said, we have not put the aim is to treat anybody, especially who is in the casualty department. They need to be able to identify this patient in the event where they can't even manage them. They need therefore to be referred to the correct places. And also to have a very strong relationship with our police and everybody, social development and justice. And the beauty of the development is that they're not only the doctors, but also the victims are empowered and prepared to be able to stand in court and put their manner in such a way that, you know, it makes sense and you can get even better from this case.
The one issue, but there are two issues that were raised. One was the monitoring of the quality of services that these people provide. Of course, monitoring and evaluation in general is indeed a challenge in terms of that, because of supervision problems. But because this, you see, this is a specialized group for the Tutuvela Center, and because of its specialty, and of course we've had only 16, and we will look piloting, so we would tell you more about how the services were in those. But if we expand the service, then your real monitoring will be in terms of what the people say about the service. In other words, customer surveys would have to help us find out how people are actually responding once the thing is larger. But also in terms of the quality of the personnel itself, we have our own performance management system. So that will still be monitored as such. Of course, the big challenge in this is that where we have a challenge of personnel, I want to repeat this, where we have problems of nurses and doctors, the very people that you want to focus and to specialize are also engaged in other activities. So that you find in a situation that this one who has had some extra training and therefore understands how to handle this victim may actually be in surgery at the moment doing other things. So we would want to ensure that in the curriculum of our doctors and nurses, this issue is also addressed, so that it's just a general thing of every doctor and every nurse. And then you monitor in terms of how people are truthful to their profession, rather than saying, I want to monitor you because I trained you in this area. But while that is happening, we have to train the people who are already in this area. So that, Chair, I think those are the questions that we have in the mind.
Yes, as I said yourself, I would make a follow-up question. I think we've been looking forward to the discussion paper emanating from the section in your art. That discussion paper, I think, will help us a lot in addressing issues. But linked to that, I had some discussion with some doctor friends of mine, and there is this threat among them on the health insurance, that they are of the opinion that the health insurance will have an impact if they are affecting generations at the moment, and some of them are already considering taking offers in other countries. Is this threat serious within the department, and if indeed it happens, do we have an affair dealing with that situation? The second question would be the issue of trauma. It's true that just being in the hospital, particularly in the public hospital, well, because I've been in some, because of the hospital, it's strong. Just being there, whilst you're waiting on the queue, you know, to be accepted, you see some other person getting certified tests, others coming, running into the hospital, killing each other. Others very critical, just seeing those people, you already get traumatized. How do we deal with that situation? I know we can't deal with it completely, but at least mitigate it. And as a committee of public representatives committee, we are dealing with the issue of disabled people. We believe there must be someone in this country, someone, who is able to can give us information on the statistics surrounding disabled people? Because this person is as part of us, and as part of our mentor. It would be so important to have information of how many we have in this country and breaking it even further into what kinds of disabilities they have and what kinds of protection they enjoy, all these things. These are the three questions for our friends. I hope I'm going to answer them. Thank you.
Otherwise, there are no other questions. Maybe new ones that I think. Other people ask me about the fear that they have a challenge. They see themselves as thinking in particular is a challenge. I want to ask to the Department of Health ever get together with the Department of Economics housing, public works, and the Department of Economic Development. Do you ever engage with them? And do you think that those departments know about all these matters? Do you think that the standing committee, the department and such, do they know about this? And the reason why I'm asking this question is the Department of Health and the Department of Social Development took the price of all these issues. And all the other departments, they just stand back and say, when it is about violence, domestic violence, and all of those things, it's the Department of Health and the Department of Social Development failing. So I'm just saying that maybe we need to reach out a bit more, because what our people do need to get them out of all of it is housing, proper infrastructure, how many children are now dying because of diarrhea, because of a lack of social of infrastructure, proper infrastructure, which means that we have to put in public works. I can carry on this issue. So I'm just really saying that maybe the time has come that we need to...
If all these other departments and other social issues could be addressed, then it will eliminate the work of the...
I heard that, but I just want to say to the department that I'm quite behind it, but also, please let us not just say it, let's do it. Let's get to the point where we actually do it. I'm really asking that. And then the question that I want to ask is, what are the education services are the department raising or available, particularly psychosocial rehabilitation with psychologists and occupational therapy?
Also, talked about collaboration, and I asked this question the other day at the Education Committee. What are we doing to prepare young people for being parents? You think about the infant mortality. You think of people who, young people who fall pregnancy, who don't look after themselves properly, not only with alcohol, but drug abuse, but with general nutrition. What are we doing as a government or people to make sure that young people who are pregnant to become mothers know what to do, how to look after children responsibly, so that those children can be brought up with the best of health and so on. Never mind the fact that they're poor, many of them are poor, there are still things. This was in parenting, I believe, are one of the big things that all people need.
I've only got two last questions from the two of you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The impact on doctors, we don't believe that it will actually be that much, because you're talking about creating, for example, the proposal is to create different kinds of arrangements. At the moment, you have individual doctors running their own surgeries, and therefore they don't give you a comprehensive kind of primary healthcare service. We want them to come in as different kinds of services, you know, occupational therapists, psychologists, and so on, in those kinds of setups. So they'll still actually be there, and then they can be accredited. We don't believe it will impact much on them. In fact, it will actually, you'll find that more doctors support the National Health Insurance than the current arrangements, where they are dependent on the medical aid to say, will you pay or will you not pay? Mm-hmm. Or you must phone and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will guarantee them their income, whatever the income is. And therefore, it will guarantee them their capital. Mm-hmm. The issue of trauma can be approached in various ways. Well, let me start by saying that in the context of the hospital, if you talk about trauma, they look at it in more advanced, severe, particularly injured terms. So when you started saying trauma, I was thinking along those lines. But you're then talking about psychological trauma, impact. I think those issues are real issues. First of all, of management. If a hospital is managed very well, the things that you're talking about, you will not see. You won't see people being certified dead in front of you as a general person. If it is managed very well, you will not see those kinds of things. You will also not see, because people who have those kinds of experiences are dealt with immediately, you know, not or in very organized ways. So I would say the first thing that you must talk about is how to improve management in our hospital. That just to deal with trauma, because what actually traumatized people is this experience of everybody in a marketplace, you know, whether you're sitting with an injury discussion, you're sitting there, somebody else is just coming just for a cough, and there's a baby here. It's just the management of those things that would eliminate 50% of the trauma you're talking about.
It's very simple
things. That, in fact, some of them, I would argue that communities, if they owned hospitals, would begin to actually say, look, we can't have our hospital continuing this way. Let's just get, just like you started with marshals in Texas, you could have hospital marshals that are community-based that can say, look, why are you in this queue? You should, because people spend time in the wrong queue. In a hospital, and because no one is managing a simple thing like a kid. And that's what traumatizes people. So I would think that for me, it's back to basic. Let's just manage our hospitals well, and therefore there won't be any trauma. But of course, the hospital. Exactly, yeah, for that, and then you find yourselves among all sorts of people. Certainly, I would think that. Part of the problem with trauma is there are hospitals that actually work with a lot of trauma because of things that are happening outside the community, similar things that we're talking about. So if we can also reduce the levels of trauma in our community, then the hospitals will have less trauma, because that's where they all match. People who have been victims of rape, they all come together in this place, but they come from there. So I would think that, and then you can have the psychological services and all sorts of things like that. But I think basically for me it's the basics that would deal with this issue. I think the statistics on disability, let's say immediately you could actually ask that SSA would actually be able to have that information, because they do the census, they do, you know, so they would have that information. But I would think now that we have a ministry that is focus, they would also be updating that information from time to time in terms of various surveys and research. But that would actually I don't know what definition the committee is working with on disability, because we had this challenge that we need a single definition of disability in the country, and then the various definitions appropriate to the purpose of the legislation. So we do have a proposed definition which came from the social cluster led by the president, which would then give different categories, because there are different categories of disability, but depending on definition. Definitions in the world go up to, you know, anybody who actually has something that limits them from realizing their potential in one way or the other is some disability. So there will be economic disability, there will be this, that, and the other. So, but I would think that the SSA would actually go with that. Incidentally, Chair, I had your correction, and I was saying what an interesting issue, because we were sitting in another meeting with representatives from the organization of people with disabilities, and they were adamant to say that they are not people with disabilities, they are disabled people. And we ourselves got shocked a bit, because we thought that was a language that was not that accepted. So we're still waiting to hear, maybe led by this committee and the ministry. What exactly is it now that you? Because from that platform, we've always said it's perfect. The emphasis is on these are human beings who just have disabilities. They're not disabled. They are very able, but they have a disability. But that's our understanding, you know. But if it comes from the organization saying it represents the kind of group, we then got a bit shocked ourselves. So it's an issue that we need to look into. That's that. Now, quickly, on the question of working with these other departments, we do. If you take, for example, the issue of Ukahlamba districts and the children that were dying there, and we sent people there, we immediately said, look, this thing is never going to actually be resolved. We can mitigate it in the hospitals and in the clinics. And there are things that the clinics should have done that they haven't done. But it has to be mitigated outside. And therefore, there must be, in the IDP, we must actually deal with those issues at that level. So we do actually, we are part of those IDPs precisely for that reason, to be sure that the social determinants of health are actually addressed. The issue of young people and young parenthood, it's addressed by the school through the curriculum, in terms of what we call life skills. But I suppose the emphasis the Minister of Health always uses this example, which I think are the tensions the society is faced with, choices. The one example he's using now is the one of condoms in school. That as a committee of education MECs and ministers, they had to deal with this issue. Because on the one hand, people were arguing that, you know, these things must be available in school. And on the other hand, if the schools are about teaching certain values, then you must emphasize those values while making sure that people know those services are available elsewhere. But the school shouldn't necessarily promote that. So you have a similar dilemma. You say, let's teach you parents. In fact, maybe the emphasis should be on sexuality education, which is what we then have in the curriculum, which will lead to avoidance of early parenthood. So, where the people then have to learn about parenthood will be beyond the school age where they are supposed to be parents. The fact that we have pregnancies, high levels of pregnancies in school, does not mean we must actually immediately then say, hey, because we are going to be pregnant, let's send you out to be. So it's a dilemma. So what I'm saying is, just to answer, what I'm saying is, issues of sexuality education are dealt with in this case. We must find other ways of supporting young people who are parents early, who are at school, but we must find other ways, and therefore that's when your youth organization do come in, because the health sector comes into it.
Can I just clarify that question? I agree with what you're saying, but I would say, not only thinking of those people at school, but I remember when I had my first child, I was 26 with that, I felt very bewildered. You don't always know what to do.
Yes.
And that's why I'm saying that for the clinic, when somebody is diagnosed and said to be pregnant, then there should be some, and is there perhaps some service where you can say, right, you're going to be a mother, and then through the pregnancy time, where they do the checkup and start, they can start giving the mother to be information about how to rear the child, all that sort of thing. Do we have enough of that? Because I think we have to ask, there are many cases where people don't really know.
The question here about rehabilitation, you want to comment on this one?
You're telling me mothers need to be about. I was trying to comment on your question on the state motherhood. Obviously, in a health facility, we are not necessarily going to be talking about the values or, you know, that side to feel accepting. However, we are being sent from antenatal care clinic before the delivery of the baby. You know, there's lots of information that is given there. Even post-delivery, there is information that is given. What we are even being now present at the Department of Health is to try and train community care workers whose focus is not on HIV AIDS or management of terminally ill patients, but even well babies, where the community care workers, like their nurses of homes, would be visiting homes, showing their mother how to work the baby, how the baby should be left on there, giving that information all the time until the mother is comfortable. But again, with regard to this issue of pregnancy and whatever else, sometimes it bothers me that people are looking at the Department of Health able to be training their children in infectiality. What is it that the parents are doing about this? Why are they pushing the back to somebody else? I think that this type of teaching should start in their home, not only their home, their church should also be supported to this kind of thing. Then we won't be having conflict in terms of what we say to them. We give them condoms, but then we say to them, you know, these are the very self-respect and dignity and delay sexuality. All of you. I think it's the responsibility of us, or even the community here, this community here. If you go out there and help us spread the word, then we'll be able to reach a lot of people.
Very much to the department. This committee will now again let you on some of the issues because we deal with so many vulnerable groups. So now again we will continue for information and cover some of the issues. And can we say thanks for coming?
Rehabilitation services.
Yes, rehabilitation services that I saw about.
You will
take it.
this I can quickly respond. Are these rehabilitation centers in relation to...
What is the services?
That is in relation to... We do have the so-called victim empowerment centers. And people are administering it well.
We will answer.
Okay. Here we have that one, survival.
Can I say that?